is. So to continue where we left off, she says, does anyone love you? And she says, no. And I say, Gada, she's this lovable person. And so I know it's not true. I know her parents love her. I know her children love her. And so I know there'd be resistance to her admitting that her parents love her because of what we've gone through. And I just got through talking about that wall. And so I said, do your children love you? And she says, yes. So then I'm able to reframe or give a totally different perspective on the entire situation by saying, what's more important, a backflip or being a good mommy? And it was laughable. I was like, ha, well, of course we are. And that puts everything into perspective, and that's why I did that. So now we've got a lot of work done. We're beginning to wrap it up a little bit. And I said, how does that make you feel? And, you know, I'm hoping she'll say, oh, I feel so much better and lighter. She goes, I feel tired. Okay. She's in a process, not ready to say she feels better yet. That's one of the things. We're not doing a one-session program. We're really involved in doing a process. So how does that make you feel? Tired. So picking up where we left off then. If someone came up to her and tried to convince her that there was something wrong with her, would you let her believe it? So I'm working on something here. I have a plan. If someone came to that little girl and said, something wrong with you, little girl. You're mean. You're not lovable. Would you let her believe it? No. That which you do to you, you do to her. From talking with Gada, I discovered she is very self-critical. She's really hard on herself. Stupid. What's wrong with you? God, what an idiotic thing to do. Would she say that to the little girl? No. She is her. She is that little girl. She is that little girl's future. And I want to set that inside. Now, in the two-session Stop Smoking program that we use, I do this in an absolutely ruthless and painful way. So we have two-session Stop Smoking program, and we have the five-path. I already told you, we go into five-path if we believe there's an emotional component. We ask them, have you ever tried to quit smoking before? And of course they're going to say yes, almost every case. So what was it like when you quit smoking? If they say, oh, it wasn't too bad, you know, I chewed some gum, went for a walk, that was fine. And that's fine, it's mainly habit, we put them in two sessions. Then there's the people who said, gosh, I gained 30 pounds, I was a monster, my family said, please start smoking again. Those are five paths. We need to use a more therapeutic approach, right? So, in the two-session Stop Smoking program, when the first session, we're going to do a direct suggestion, preparation, testing, convincing, and then read the script. Stop Smoking script. Session two, so fun. Before we get started the session, we say, boy, I'll look at their list of benefits and they'll say, oh, stop burning holes in my clothes. Stop worrying about my health. Stop spending all that money on cigarettes. Oh, God, if I had all the money I'd ever spent on cigarettes my whole life, I could probably buy a yacht. So I say, okay, wouldn't it be nice if you knew then about all the problems that starting smoking was going to get in your life? Oh, yeah. If you knew then what you know now, would you like to have never started? Yes. Okay, good. This is before the hypnosis, second session, during the pre-hypnosis interview. I do the induction, I do the deepening, and then I do a date-time regression. Not affect bridge. I say to them, I'm going to send them to a specific date or time. I say, in a moment, I'm going to count from three back to one. When I get to one, you're going to be at the time, the very first time you ever put a cigarette in your mouth to smoke it. Three, going back, becoming younger, smaller. Two, going way back to that very first cigarette. One, what's happening? And we get the story of the first cigarette.
oh, well, Billy just came over. Oh, well, how do you feel about that? I like Billy. Okay, how old are you? I'm 15. Okay. How old's Billy? Oh, he's 15 too. Okay. What you doing? We're going to have a cigarette. Oh, where'd you get the cigarettes? Billy stole from his mom's purse. Okay. You tell me everything as it happens. Oh, we're going out behind the garage. Okay. How come you want to have a cigarette? Very important question. Why do you want to have a cigarette? Oh, if I smoke, I'll be cool like the other guys. If I smoke, then Mary Jane's going to think I'm cool like, Ricky, or whatever it is. See? I'm going to look more mature if I smoke. I'm going to be cooler if I smoke. Okay, good. Tell me everything as it happens. I'm lighting the cigarette. Good. Now, listen, I'm that first puff. I go, how does it taste? You see their face go. Oh, it's not so good. So what are you doing? I'm trying not to get the smoke in my eyes. Okay. Now what are you doing? I'm blowing the smoke out, trying to look cool. Okay. Do you like it? Oh, it's not so good. Now what are you doing? We have another one. Another smoke. Another puff. So, well, if you don't like it, how come you're another puff? Well, I can't let the other guys know that I'm not cool, or that I can't do that. It's kind of tough. What are you trying to do? I just tried to inhale it. Good sound effect. Right? So, and they go on smoking the cigarette, hating it. And they go, why are you continuing? I want to look cool, I want to look older, it's going to make me look sexier, all this stuff, and we're friends. Okay. Yes. Be grown up. Well, it'd be nice if you knew then what you know now. There he is, he's 15. Got that cigarette hanging out of his mouth. Does he look cool? No, he looks like an idiot. Is he sexier? It'd take a lot more than a cigarette to make him look sexy. Okay. And so on. We start busting these ideas that the 15 has. Now I want you to think about all the problems that this has caused you in your life. Let's go back and tell him. I'm go back, count from 3 back to 1. It's going to be before he ever had that first cigarette. And we go back and we tell 15, I say, grown up, tell 15 whatever you wished you would have known then. I can't do this for you. Inside you are the words that he needs to hear, so he'll never light that first cigarette. Do it. And boy, they can be ruthless. Listen, here he is, stupid little punk. You ain't going to get Mary Lou if you smoked a cigar, man. She's not interested in you. And you look ridiculous with that cigarette hanging out of your mouth. And you're going to regret that for the rest of your life. Good, be 15. You believe him? I mean, he is you. He can't lie to you. If he tried to lie to you, he'd know for the words ever came out of your mouth. Out of his mouth. You believe him? Yes. So you want a cigarette? Nah. Or if he does, then I will say, grown up, come on, I can't do this for you. What are the words that you wished you would have known then so you never would have started? You see, 15 won't listen to anybody except himself. So I got himself, you see? They have a talk with them. It's kind of like Christmas past and Christmas future kind of thing. And he talks him out of having a cigarette. Then we run into the same situation where he tells Billy, that's stupid. I don't want some stupid cigarette. You hooked on those, ruin your life. Expensive. I don't want to spend my money on cigarettes. Be grown up. You proud of him? Yes, I am. Good. Tell him, I'm so proud of you. See? Listen, grown up. Here's where I get that. The best part, right? I said, grown up, what if someone came up to you and said, hey, 15, you look cool like me if you smoked a cigarette. Would you let him believe it? No, he's not going to look cool smoking a cigarette. What about, hey, you get the girl of your dreams if you smoke a cigarette? No, it's ridiculous. How about, now I do a dirty trick. whatever the reason adult has given for his inability to stop smoking, like, need something to do with my hands, I get bored, stress. I say, what if 15 got bored? Would you say, here, have a cigarette? No, that's ridiculous. What if 15 says, hey, I don't know what to do with my hands? Would you say, hey, start smoking? No, that's stupid. Okay, what if you got stressed out, having a bad day? Would you say, here, 15, have a cigarette, put this in your mouth? He says, I'd never do that to you. Good, because that what you do to you do to him. And if you ever put another cigarette in your mouth, you put one in 15 mouth. I say, that changes things, doesn't it? Are you now a non-smoker, going to be a non-smoker the rest of your life? Good times, bad times, thick or thin, alone or with somebody. Is there anything you could ever imagine make you want to do that to yourself again? No way, man. I said, then you are a non-smoker, going to be a non-smoker the rest of your life. Say it with me as I say it out loud. I am now a non-smoker, going to be a non-smoker the rest of my life. I am now a non-smoker, going to be a non-smoker the rest of my life. And you just let them reinforce that over and over. Or I will go into the script and I'll just read the script tomorrow. Or whatever. Now, they're ready to accept it. Why? Insight process. They can never think of that cigarette the same way again. Insight forces the subconscious mind to a state of what? Heightened suggestibility, hyper-suggestibility, even more than most other hypnotic states. And so then we just fire in the suggestions and they accept it. Let's say at a moment we count one, three, negative three, you're going to fully emerge from hypnosis. One, two, three, look at me. Are you now a non-smoker? Going to be a non-smoker for the rest of your life? Good times, bad times, thick or thin, alone or with somebody. Is there anything you could ever imagine? Make you want to do that to yourself again? No. And I said, then who's in charge now? You or the cigarettes? I am. Beautiful. Congratulations being a non-smoker. And they've never felt so much like a non-smoker in their life. I walk them down the hallway. As we walk down the hallway, we always say one thing. We always say, I'm glad you enjoyed that. And why do we do that? We do that for whoever's out in the waiting room. Wouldn't that be nice if your dentist did that? Walking out with a patient, glad you enjoyed that. Oh, he's good. And the guy's going, ooh, ooh, ooh. And then I walk him up. There's a certificate there. And on the certificate, it says, Joe Schmo became a non-smoker such and such date at the Banyan Hypnosis Center. And over there it says, hypnotherapist Cal Banyan, you know, I affirm that Joe Schmo was hypnotized, reached a state of somnambulism, and became a non-smoker. I sign it. And over here, it says, I became a non-smoker on such and such a day. And I said, this one's for you. Just as they reach right, wait a minute. Are you now a non-smoker? Going to be a non-smoker the rest of your life? Good times, bad times, thick or thin, alone or with someone. Is there anything you can imagine make you ever do that to yourself again? No, I said, sign it. It's all yours. Imagine if there's somebody in the waiting room saying that. They're going, man, have I come to the right place? Building confidence, you see. Always thinking in terms of the system. So, this idea of that which we do to ourselves, we do to the child, and we find this child to be so dear, so lovable, right? Then we start thinking about treating ourselves better. So we can use that technique with the non-smoker, or the person we're doing the non-smoking, smoking cessation program with, or we can do it here, when we find someone is doing something self-destructive to themselves. In this case, it's criticism. Could have been alcohol. You know, there he is, you know, 5 years old. He's having a bad day. He's thinking nobody loves him, that he's not safe and secure, wants to hide away. Would you go up to him and say, here, have a drink, you'll feel better. What, you're stressed here, have a drink. No, that's ridiculous. And so we can turn it around this way in a very powerful way. I like doing emotional work because an emotional work works. Even back in the days when I was doing talk therapy, when I was just a student, a graduate student learning talk therapy, in that we would videotape our sessions and we'd go in front of our classmates and with one of the professors and we'd review it. And I figured out very, very early on in the process, back when I was doing talk therapy, that pretty much you go blah, 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 and all of a sudden, it might be a week, it might be the third week, the fourth week, they cry. And then change happens. And until you get them to cry, you don't get much change. You either got them to cry or get mad, one or the other. And then there's an opportunity for change. But in talk therapy, it took weeks. Now I can get them mad in just, you know, a few minutes.
Oh, you're so happy.
Yeah, they're like, ha, ha, ha. Oh, it pisses you off, doesn't it?
But emotion is pure energy. That's where the change comes from. We either got to release the emotion, we got to transform the emotion, we have to have insight into the thoughts and beliefs that are creating the emotion. That's where the power is. That's where long-term change is, you see.
So yes? You would do this if there's an emotional component to smoking. This is the thing that you would do, just do the grips to the day event for starting.
That's the one where there's no emotional component.
There is no emotional component. All right.
Well, there's always an emotional component.
Okay.
Some are mostly habit, yeah. They get the two session.
Yeah.
Some are mostly emotion, they get five power.
All right.
But even though there's not a strong emotional component for the people we work with the two-session session, I'm still going to get them emotional.
Yeah. And
because that's where it is.
That's the point.
That's where the change happens. I don't hardly do any good at all unless I hurt them a little bit.
How do you determine if it's simply behavioral?
Okay, like I already said, that we ask the question, have you ever tried to quit smoking before? If they say yes, which they almost always do, start to sound familiar? Then I say, what happened? And they say, well, you know, I started chewing gum, or I went for walks instead, and after a couple of weeks I was fine. That's not an emotional smoker, that's someone that's mostly habit. If they say, oh man, I turned into a monster, I cried all the time, I gained 30 pounds, and stuff like that, that's the emotional person. And then you'll have to go into 5-pack.
You find a ratio between the two, let's say maybe 80-20 or something?
I don't know.
Just interesting.
I think that most of them are 5-pack. Most of them are emotional. We would just do all of them that way, because all of them have some emotional component, except in order to remain competitive in the environment that we work in, there's people out there who are doing stop smoking in less than the average of 5 sessions, and so we needed to have a more competitive thing. And we said, okay, who can we work with in less than an average of 5 sessions? And we said, these people who are, it's mainly habit, those people we can work with in less than 2. Yes, hypnotherapists saying, gosh, I do hypnosis, some quit, some don't. And then they have the audacity to blame the client. Oh, those who quit through my process were ready. And those that didn't, they weren't ready. No, I'm sorry, hypnotherapist. You were the one that wasn't ready. You weren't ready to provide them the process that they needed so that they could fulfill their needs, wants, and desires. Okay? So that's why we don't do one session hypnosis. Yes, some people will quit. But who? Mainly it's the people who are habit. You know, and you're going to get a certain percentage. I'm not the guy that goes from hotel room to hotel room. Guaranteed, stop smoking, $65, one session. Guaranteed. Then he hits the hotel, and then he goes, next stop is Arizona. What's the guarantee? You know, if you ever catch me in town again, you know, you can have more of what didn't work. You can come to another one of my sessions for free. Okay, useless guarantee. So I'm there. I'm the local hypnosis shop. I've got to build a clientele and a reputation.
What do you charge for a two-session program?
Whatever the price, double the price of one session. For our regular hypnotherapists, I think that's like $149 a session. So two times that. Yeah, if you buy a package, it goes down and you save. So, next one on page 147. Finish up with direct suggestion. All sessions of all phases are ended with direct suggestion. Yes, Kim?
Well, I had a question before lunch, and it was basically when we're back with Gata and the regression. And here's what I picked up. I never got that she really liked doing a baton or a backflip. I never saw any, either the adult her or that, you know, question her and say, do you really like doing this? Is this something you really want to do? Because oftentimes kids are forced to do something they don't want to do.
Yeah. That seems relevant for something that's happening in the present, but I don't see how that's relevant in something in the past.
Well, it's really interesting.
I might be missing something.
Well, her adult her was kind of critical. Anything you do, you can do. Well, if you hate doing it, you're already rigged for failure from get-go.
Right, yeah. Yeah, if you want to do this, you can do well with it. You can keep up with it, yes.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to get your point. What is your point on it?
The point was, is if the kids there twirling baton or going to gym class and they're really not liking it, they're feeling like a failure. And here's their inside adult telling, well, you can do it if you try. And your parents were already telling them the kid really doesn't want to be there, especially in those families, because I've watched they get the hyper drive and, you know, well, you will take tennis, you will do this. Something about the Islam community, when they go west, the girls have to play tennis. Yeah, but, you know, it's kind of like, well, nobody asked the kid if they even like doing it.
Well, if that insight is useful for the kid at the time, I would certainly try to give that to him. Yeah. And everybody's different, yeah. Post-hypnotic interview. I'll say, and you do feel better, don't you? I don't know if I feel better. I feel relieved. Well, relief is better, but again, she's in the process of five path and not finished, and she's not ready to admit to feeling better. That's okay. I know she feels better. And I know I got her coming back. She asked me, why did I open my eyes? And when she first asked me about this, I didn't know why she was asking. But then it dawned on me, see, this session was done the same day as the first session. How did I prove to her she was hypnotized? Eye lock, inability to open her eyes. So she was concerned that because she opened her eyes, she might not have been hypnotized. It's very important that I caught that and said, you can open your eyes in hypnosis. I have people open their eyes in hypnosis for demonstrations all the time. Otherwise, she would have begun to reject all the work that we had done if she believed she wasn't in hypnosis. Time distortion is continuing even though the sessions are very long, much longer than usual. What's the other way I used to convince her she's hypnotized? Time distortion. And it was done the same day. So she's still time distorting, even after a long hour and a half hypnosis session. God, that surprised me how fast that session went. Surprised how fast, how long these sessions are. Yeah, me too. And she also talks about, you know, my touch being, you know, authentic and, you know, that kind of thing. Okay to call me. It's okay to call me. I'm usually teaching or in session. You don't want to say, call me anytime you want. I got nothing to do. Gosh, I wish I had clients. You know? And don't give them your home phone number. You know, you give them the office number. If your home phone number is in, if your office number is in your home office, then you need to have some 9-to-5 kind of attitude about that. If you've got somebody that you're so worried about that you want to give them your home phone number, maybe you shouldn't be working with them. Maybe they should be seeing a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a counselor. At the very least, you need to give them some kind of hotline support. And if you're not a counselor, psychologist, or something like that, what are you going to do on the phone? You're not going to do hypnosis with them. Okay, if they call up in a panic, they need to be seeing someone that handles panic situations. So you give them a hotline, have the hotline numbers and stuff like that for your area. Suicide prevention, that kind of thing, if you're worried about that. But I don't ever give anyone my home phone number. And if you don't, if you think I'm heartless, then I've got a homework assignment for you this weekend. Rent, what about Bob? Some of you have seen that, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a caper. Why would you rent it? You'd own it.
So it's this movie about this psychiatrist that takes on this clingy type patient and pretty much just follows him home, takes over the home. Pretty soon the psychiatrist is the bad guy and Bob is the good guy, and so you should see that. Another good movie to see once you start doing this is called The Kid. Have you ever heard that? What's his name? That's
Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis and The Kid. And it's a really interesting movie because he starts seeing this kid everywhere. And this kid, you know, that's like running around his house when he's not there, finally catches him in the house and all this stuff. And Bruce Willis plays this guy. He's an image consultant, high-powered image consultant. He lives in a glass high-rise and all this kind of stuff. Later on, he finds out this kid, it's him when he was a kid. So then he gets the idea, I know, I have to fix this kid. And so I won't give away the rest of the story, but it's a lot like the informed child technique, and that the changes that happen through this interaction between the child and adult, very healing.
Oh, that's fabulous. I mean, it's like that time, Melissa. I couldn't believe it. The shrinks were bringing me clients. It took them like 3 months to get around to watching that movie. I said, man, that should be in your office, like a stack of them this deep.
Right, right. Also, if you haven't seen it, you want to see The Secret. Is there anyone here that has seen the movie The Secret? Oh my gosh, the rest of you got to see that movie, The Secret. It's all about really how the way you think and the way you feel is creating your reality. It's about co-creatorship, and it's hugely important. People are saying, like I always have these secret projects going on and stuff, and people never know what I'm going to do next. Where do you get these ideas? Well, it really comes from these a lot of these things like The Secret movie, The Law of Attraction. When the movie came out, people were going, they're explaining why Seventh Path works, you see. And there's a wonderful training program based on the movie The Secret called The Secret Science of Getting Rich by Jack Canfield, the fellow who put together the Chicken Soup for the Soul series. Bob Proctor, a hugely successful success coach, who wrote You Were Born Rich, and Reverend Michael Beckwith, a very well-respected individual who has a church in L.A. And so if you get a chance, go see it and stop. Okay. Another one, What the Bleep Do We Know is another good one to go see. All right. Where was I? That's it. Call me at the office. I'm usually busy, but I'll get back to you. And that kind of stuff. Okay. Hey. Call me! Make me feel important. I won't call you back, though. By the way, if you email me, prepare to wait. I am typically 3 to 4 days behind in my email at any time. If you have to get a hold of me right now, call. Just call. But if you email, some people get ticked off. I emailed you 3 days ago, and I'm going to answer. And I go, you know what? Some people wait a month to get an email back from me. The more complicated your question is, the more I have to think about it, the longer it's going to take to get answered. Okay? But if you need something right now, then call me. Also, the Five Path group on Yahoo and the Five Path group on ourhypnospace.com, we've got people like Celeste and Nancy Ho and all of our other kind of senior Five Pathers.
Wendy Weber.
They'll just answer your question right there, like that. I usually don't answer questions on those groups unless Maureen, she approves all the messages. It's a moderated group. She goes, so-and-so has a question. Nobody's answered it, and it's important. And then I'll get in there and answer it. And then if I answer it, they'll probably turn it into a blog entry and everything because it takes time to put together a decent answer for you, so I might as well publish it, make an article out of it or something. Okay. That way the many can benefit from the experiences of the few.
Spot.
Yes. It does sound kind of spooky, doesn't it? All right. What should we do now? I've got an idea.
I'm not sure. I'm writing the whole board. You never know.
So, one day, you have a client come in, and you decide to do some age regression. I need a holster because I'm always looking around for this. Maybe a hat like those baseball fans have with a can of beer on each side. Except me, I just have, you know. So, here you go. You got clients in for something. And he says, feeling inside you don't like, has everything to do with why you came here today. It's like alpha 5 back to 1.
and you go back to an earlier time, you felt that way. Boing. And they go back here. We'll say this was 40, we'll say this is 20. Familiar or new? Okay, it's familiar. You had focus on that in the environment earlier time and felt that way. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Let's say, if they're 40 years old now, what year were they born?
It's like 1967?
1967. It depends on when in 1967 they were born, right? And I say, go back to an earlier time, felt that way. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Familiar spot, 10. Okay, 5. Familiar, known, familiar, go back to an earlier time, felt that way. 5. Familiar, known, familiar, go back to an earlier time, felt that way. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay. How old are you?
50.
50 years old. Okay. 40 years old. Now, remember, I don't get to see this long. All I go is, okay, how old are you?
I'm 50.
What you doing, 50?
I'm driving my truck.
How do you feel about that?
I like driving my truck.
Okay, so I'm talking to 50. Now this is, let's call her Sal. That's Sal. Short for Sally. Sal's a good gal right there. And so now this doesn't compute. And so I might say, 50, where are you?
I'm driving across, you know, continental USA. I'm just heading outside of Barstow.
Okay. What year is it?
It's 1955.
Don't you know nothing? Okay. Now you guys get to theorize about what's going on here. What do you think is going on there? There's a number of different things.
Past life.
There's one theory. It could be past life regression. Did I direct her to have that past life? No, I just said go back. I'm just following the affect back to an earlier time, right? John?
It's a movie that you've seen that somehow could affect her.
It is a complete confabulation.
Yes.
She's fantasizing.
Or has seen a movie and has internalized it somehow.
Okay, so it's not real. Okay. Anything else?
Genetic memory.
Genetic memory. Akashic record. Whatever. Okay, so there's some theories. How are we going to figure out which it is?
I'll treat them all the same. Like, it's utilize whatever you got to get where you want.
Okay. That's one approach. As long as you get the result, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, there's a lot of people out there that do past life regression therapy. And I wrote, one of my first articles for the MGH that I wrote was, never do past life regression on purpose. That was a parenthetical remark. Boy, Dr. Dwight Damon called me up. He said, at least we know people are reading the journal, because a lot of people wrote in and didn't like that. I never caused such a commotion until I wrote an article, Is EFT Hypnosis? Oh, that pissed off a lot of people, too. But you know me, I don't like to ruffle anyone's feathers. Okay. So here we go. The past life regression therapist will deal with the problem in the past life. I almost never do. You know what I do? I kill them. I'm not going to do diddly squat with Joe. Did I see his name was Joe or no?
Uh-huh.
Joe?
Yes, Joe.
Thought
it was a girl.
Oh, back in 50, Joe was, Sal was Joe.
Yeah.
1955, Sal reported to me that she was Joe. Is there some confusion going on?
A lot.
That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, well, we go back here, and I said, what is your name? And let's say, 1955, driving the truck,
across the country, just outside of Barstow, and I say, what's your name?
Joe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Does that mess with anybody's theory? It still could be a past life regression, could still be a fantasy, confabulation.
Good. Sounds wonderful. Yep, sounds right.
Okay. So a lot of people do the work there, try to find out where his problem began, do all that stuff in the past life. You know what? Joe is not my client.
He is not paying you.
Try to get him to pay for the session. It's not going to work. So I don't do that. I do past life regression therapy. Joe is not my client. I kill it. This is how I kill it. I say in a moment, I'm going to gavel 1 to 5. When I get to 5, it's going to be the last few minutes of your existence, Joe. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then Joe goes to the end of his existence. You heard a flat line. Well, we're going to red line it. Okay? So he goes, and there he dies. 1965. Okay? Now, what do I do? I say, okay, first I want to find out how he dies. Not that it's all that important. Sometimes it is. Say, what's happening? First of all, if you say, we'll go to the last few moments of your life, and he starts going, oh, I'm burning up, I'm burning up. You go, you're dead. No sense of putting him through all.
Oh, Lord.
What happened, Joe? You know, find out what happened. You know, no sense of going through unnecessary agony. This is for them, it's not for me. So, I just end it. And then I'll say, you know, what was that life like for you? And now, what's happening? Now, here's what's, this is really important. I go, what's happening? What's happening? What's happening? Now what's happening? What's happening? What's happening? I could get into that a little bit. And you know what? We don't want to lead them. We don't say, step into the light or anything like that. Just say, what's happening? Tell me the story. What's happening? Tell me the story. What's happening? And we'll find out what happens. Because basically, one of two things will happen. Okay? And that is, either they will have some kind of transitioning experience where they move on to the next thing that they're supposed to move on to, an ascension experience of some sort, where they leave the earth plane and go to the next one. Or they stick around. One or the other. They either go or they don't go. Delta gave us free will. We can go or we cannot go. So, that's what I got to find out. What's happened? What's happened? What's happened? If this is her past life, there will be a transition experience where she leaves that body, leaves that experience, and has a period in between lives, goes through a preparation stage, and comes back in 1967 as baby Sal. That kind of makes sense? Now, people say, Cal, why don't you do past life regression on purpose? I never do anyone on purpose for therapy. And I know there's a lot of people that do. But I tell you what, it is not logical. First of all, what I tell you to think of what your clients tell you, don't believe it. So if the client comes to you and says, I want to do past life regression therapy because I got this fear of snakes, I can't think of anything in this life that would possibly cause that, so it must be the past life. Let's do past life regression therapy and try to fix my fear of snakes. That's not logical at all, but there's a lot of people out there to do it. I mean, if I'm not going to believe it in this life, how am I going to believe it in their life, or some previous life? Here's another thing. According to those who believe in past lives and future lives and all that stuff, there is a common theory, and that is, there's a purpose to it. There's a reason why you have this life and the next life. So, if you have this life, why do you have the subsequent life? You have the subsequent life to take care of whatever hasn't been taken care of in the previous life, or to finish it, or to work out whatever needed to be worked out. That's the whole thing. So, if you believe in past lives and future lives, you probably believe that there's some consciousness running this whole thing. Otherwise, it just wouldn't make any sense. So that consciousness ordained that you should have these successive lives. Why in the world would that consciousness, God, Delta, whatever you want to call it, put you in a subsequent life where the way to fix it is in the previous life? And the only way you could possibly do that is to find a past life regression therapist to do it. That doesn't make any sense at all. It seems like if there's such thing as subsequent lives, then everything we need to do everything we need to do in that life must be in that life. So my ISE or whatever event that re-triggers whatever start here exists in this life. Okay. It might have been triggered 47 lives, but in every life it got triggered until it gets worked on. So I don't work in the past life. Yes.
Would there be any benefit to just saying to Joe, we're going to go back to, I mean, instead of finding out how he died, just to move Joe back to Sal?
Just say, I don't want to work with you, Joe, let's go back to Sal.
Yeah.
Well, let me continue with what I'm trying to accomplish here, and I think it will be self-revelatory. Okay, so here he dies, I say, what's happening, what's happening, what's happening? One of two things. They'll either ascend or not ascend. If they ascend, you know, let's say they ascend and they go up to, you know, heaven. There's heaven, the sun is shining, and everything is beautiful up in heaven.
72 virgins.
They do whatever they do there, and then blink, comes right back down and gets born again. Okay? And that's, you know, heaven's, you know, I don't know where this stuff is at. But you go somewhere, you come back and whatever. They go through some kind of processing, preparation, and then come back in again. And then something happens in their life that triggers the issue. That's why they chose that life, that circumstance, those parents, or whatever. And then they get a chance to continue working on whatever the issue is. Beautiful. That's fine. And then I will work with the earliest event in this life and call it an ISE. Because it's the earliest event in this life where it manifests. So that's cool. What if they don't ascend? This is the other option, right? They don't go. They don't go up to heaven or wherever the processing unit, the recycling plant, wherever that is. And we go, okay, what's happening, Joe? I'm driving my pickup truck. What's happening, Joe? I'm driving my pickup truck. Okay. Move the last few minutes of your life. Whoop, 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 whoop. What happened? Damn. Ice. Whoop, whoop. Kaboom, pop, boom, pop. What's happening, Joe? Oh, my God.
Decent.
He walks around. See his body there? Yada, 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 yada. Looks his truck. Oh my God, what truck. So Joe is a beer drinking, truck driving, honky tonking, cowboy hat wearing, big ass silver belt buckle wearing, chain on. He's just a normal kind of guy from that kind of mindset. He's not emo. He's just the good old boy that just got good old dead. Okay? He had an accident, he did. And now he looks at his dead body and says, man, I cannot even believe what's going on here. He looks at his truck and goes, oh, shit. What does Joe want right now?
A beer.
He goes, man, I want a beer like you can't believe. Right? So he walks out to the road. Maybe I can catch a ride. And he can stay there for a long time. Because nobody can see him. Because he's a ghost. Right? He says, man, people are unfriendly around these parts. a walk into town. So it's a long walk. It goes in. Goes into the first bar, tavern, whatever you want to call it. Walks in. Barkeep, give me a beer. Got some Lone Star Pearl beer? Those are Texas beers. And, you know, the bartender completely ignores him. He's, man, these are some unfriendly parts. Man deserves a beer. He's sitting there going, oh, my God. And then what? Something that people can't see him. And this other guy, he just walks up and goes, boom. Now, all of a sudden, Joe is inside this other guy. And the other guy, Pete, says, hey, give me a beer. Gets a beer. Starts drinking it. And Joe's going, damn.
It's good.
He just got a beer, and he doesn't have to pay for it or nothing. He says, I don't know what just happened, but that sure did wet my whistle. I wonder what everybody else is drinking. He's looking around, oh, that guy's drinking the kind of beer I want. So over there. And he can drink all night for free. See? An interesting thing happens is when, you see, when the consciousness of another soul melds with the consciousness of your soul, it's really hard to tell your needs, wants, and desires from there. The consciousness is all mixed. And so over here, Jerry, who usually drinks, you know, Michelob, all of a sudden he's ordering Pearl. Funny, I'm kind of in the mood for some Pearl beer today. And he's drinking this Pearl beer. Strange. And I like it, too. Never liked this stuff before. So, you know, what happens? Joe starts haunting the tavern. It becomes like the tavern ghost. Sometimes he leaves, though. It's the end of the night. He just figures out who the luckiest guy going to be that night. He just goes, vroom, and there goes home with the sweetest little honey in the honky-tonk. Because remember, Joe is a beer-drinking truck driver, honky-tonk kind of guy. So that's an example of what could happen, just being earthbound. Now, they don't all go and want a beer and go to the tavern. Sometimes they just wander around. Sometimes I just wander around going, gosh, what happened? Moan. You know, not all beer drinking, truck driving. I just wander around. And sometimes they'll find someone that they have what I call an affinity for. Sometimes they just feel more connected with that person. Maybe that reminds them of their wife or their husband or their child. Let's say that Joe was wandering around. You know, he didn't affix to a particular property. He's just wandering around. And he sees this little girl. And she's such a sweet little girl. Kind of reminds him of his little girl. And she's playing imaginary tea party. And she's sitting at the table. And she's pretending she's having tea with this person over here. You know what Joe does? He takes the other side. And it's so nice to have somebody. It's almost like she can see him. And he starts hanging around with her. Makes him feel good. She's got imaginary friends. And he'll just take on that role. He doesn't really see her. She doesn't really see him. But she does the imaginary thing. And he's perfect. He just gets in that role. And she asks him to find something he can answer. She can't really hear it. But, you know, it's almost as good as being real. And what can happen over a period of time, a relationship develops. And where there's a relationship, there's an attraction. And Joe's spirit can glom onto her spirit. Merge. And then what did I say? Once the two spirits have combined like that, it's hard to tell your needs, wants, and desires from the other ones. So here's a little Sal, 5 years old. This is when he joined her. She's sitting there, just having a normal little 5-year-old girl day, and he comes to visit. And all of a sudden, this thought comes to her head. Damn. Nancy's got some nice legs. Damn, I feel like I'm in the wrong body. I feel like I should be in a boy's body. You see, Joe had already, as a 50-year-old man, strongly identified with the gender of male. Attraction to females. 5-year-old. See, back in the 60s, there was lots of kids who thought that just two boys and girls
was that boys had short hair, wore pants, girls had long hair, wore dresses. I mean, it was an innocent time. But even today, we're not strongly identified to a gender when we're 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. See? So, now I'm not saying this is the case for all homosexuality, all transvestitism, all transsexualism, but I have seen this come up in a case. So all of a sudden, she starts having this interest in grown women. She has this weird feeling about being in this body. But they're not her interests. They're not her feelings. It's Joe's feelings in her body. And the consciousness melt. If this continues, by the time she gets to be 40, when Sal comes into my office, you know what? She might just be a little bit bigger than the other girls. She might come in wearing a cowboy hat. Big silver buckle, cowboy boots, and be kind of a beer-drinking, honky-tonking gal that likes to go pick up the other little gal from the honky-tonk. Because some of his needs, wants, and desires are being manifested through her personality. And because it happened early in the development of her personality, his needs, wants, and desires became integrated.
Does this express itself in parts or split personality?
Parts is a different thing. That's normal aspects of a person's personality. Multiple personality, I'm not enough of an expert on to comment on that. But it will get more interesting. Pretty boring stuff. It'll get interesting. So now, guess why Sally came to see me? Drinking. Drinking. She was drinking too much. She's had trouble. She had an automobile accident, a DUI. But guess what? The alcohol problem's not her problem. It's his problem. The appropriate thing to do here is called spirit releasement therapy. What we must do is release Joe. And so I'm going to give you a thumbnail sketch of how to do that. This is outside of the normal curriculum, okay? And so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I want you to have the heads up. Because if you do this work, which is centered around age regression, if you do enough of this work, this happens. Sooner or later, you're going to get this. And so you have to have some idea of what to do. When this happens, what you want to do is you want to talk to Joe, okay? See, we brought up that desire to drink, right? That's what took us back here. Found Joe, and what we got to do is we got to inform Joe. Joe, is it your intent to hurt Sal? Is that why you're with her? You're trying to ruin her life, hurt her? Now remember, Joe's just a guy. He's not evil. He's just trying to get his needs met in a very unusual situation, okay? No, gosh, I don't want to hurt her. Sal's my gal, man. She's a good gal. She's like a daughter to me. Well, that's what you're doing. At the very least, you're draining her energy. And you're messing up her life. Is that what you meant to do? No. Okay. And then you suggest to them that they get a second chance. And to become aware around them. Because they have an opportunity to move in to another aspect of existence, to where they get a spirit body that is just the right body, where they never get hungry, they never get thirsty, they never get old, and it fits just right. How would you like that? Well, I'd like to. This is good. And you let them have that opportunity to have their ascension experience. Now, stereotypically, it goes like this. Oh, I see a light. Surprise, surprise, right? But, okay, how do you feel about that? Well, it's kind of exciting. Good. Why don't you move into that light? And some will go, okay. And they're ready to go.
Right.
Sometimes it's more difficult. Sometimes they're a little bit scared. I don't know. We're doing all right. No. You want to hurt Sal? No. So you got to move into that light. And then what I will do is I will call out into the light. As I call out into the light, to one who knew Joe before he died. Someone that cares about him and loves him. And then Joe goes, oh, it's Aunt Pearl. Okay, Aunt Pearl, come over here. Inside you, the words he needs to hear. So that he can understand what he needs to do now. And she'll talk to him. Now he's getting ready to go. If there's any hesitation, then you do this. You say, I want you to reach out and touch her. Because I want you to convince yourself that a spirit body is real to you. Because you're a spirit. Spirit bodies feel real to spirits just like physical bodies feel real to people who are physical. Sometimes they'll actually reach their hand out like this and go, ah, yes. But here's the secret.
Don't tell any
spirits this, okay? But once they touch the other side, they've crossed over. Once they've touched her, there's no coming back. So he's now crossed over. So that's pretty cool. Any questions about that?
So you, when you are talking to him, you suggest that he sees somebody that he loved before in the past.
I call out to the light. I really do an invocation. I invoke the spirit of someone that knew him.
Someone that knew Joe.
I say, I call out into the light someone that knew him before he died, that loves him, cares about him, misses him. Okay? To wait for him. And then Joe goes, oh, it's Aunt Pearl. Or it's my little sister, Betty. It's old Yeller. You know, it's something going to come and help him cross over. And can tell him stuff that I couldn't tell him. Convince him to move over. Yes?
Well, if Joe was such a part of Sal's personality, you know, honky-tonkin, beer drinking,
all that good stuff.
When he leaves, what is...
We'll get there.
Okay.
What is the moon like when that happens? Can you feel that happening? Can you see that happening?
Well, you can see a light come into the room.
No,
and
but can you feel the
energy?
I suppose if you're a kind of person that can feel that stuff, you would.
And Sib has had that happen. She's telling me for everyone who's with her. I don't think that really happens.
Sometimes you can feel it. Sometimes you just can't.
Well, I'm not going to say you could feel it, because some of you will, some of you won't. It just depends on your own sensitivities. Okay? But don't compete with me.
Just a little question, though. What you're saying about when you're dead, you have feelings. Feelings are part of the physical body, the unconscious mind.
Well, then you have a spirit body. And it appears that they have feelings because they can be afraid, or they can feel glory, or they can feel gratitude, and they can feel feelings too. So they seem to report.
So how many of these incidences have you...
I had a time where I had a number of them. And it seemed like they came to me so that I could learn about it, so I could teach it. And then what happened is, you know, we usually have 3, 4, 5 hypnotherapists as they started coming to another hypnotherapist.
Yeah.
And they just moved to them. They came to me long enough to teach me about how to teach this. It'll happen sometimes still, but there was a time when I went through a lot of it, and then it went on to someone else.
So, Sarah's program, not solved without Joe's problem?
Yeah, Sal, this problem is not Sal's problem.
So if I go to ISE and age regression and FO, even if you do all part path, but if you cannot speak the Releasement therapy itself has a still problem.
Okay, if this is the problem, bypass not going to work on her because it's not her problem, it's Joe's problem. What we need to do is we need to get rid of Joe.
But how come Joe put on her mind and her program and her...
Just by being with her, it happens. But just by being with her and eventually melding with her, they just like a ghost can attach to a building.
right? It can attach to a person. There are haunted houses, haunted buildings, haunted cars, and haunted people.
So, we admit there is a ghost.
I didn't understand that.
Okay.
He's a ghost.
So, there is a ghost.
Yes.
It seems so, yes.
Okay.
Oh, this is going to get... Akiko, this is going to get much worse. As I go on.
Okay.
Sweet dreams tonight.
Well, are you afraid that Joe will jump into you?
No.
But you guys would have too much fun hanging out together.
Well, what if we don't have the resonance? I mean, he's already attached to her, and that's kind of his home. And that he's going to go there, or he's going to cross over. And let me take this a step further. In fact, a big step further. Why didn't Joe ascend? So once Joe's ready to cross over, I go, Joe, before you go. See, I can't see spirits. Thank you, Lord. Okay. I don't know if you're one of those people. I see dead people. I'm out of my mind, right? So, where was it? Okay, Joe is passing over to the place he needs to be, and I say, Joe, before you go, please check back with Seth. Is there any more energies in or around her that's not her? You know, like yourself. And often where we find one, we will find many. Because the first one weakens their spiritual immune system. Just like we have a physical immune system, we have a spiritual immune system. When that's weakened, others can attach. So sometimes we'll find out Sal's got 3, 4, 5 other entities in her. And guess what? One likes to drink beer, one loves chocolate, the other one's a cigarette smoker, and all of a sudden, she's got these needs, wants, and desires that could never be fully satiated. They're not even hers. So they all got to be released. So they say, oh yeah, there's Betty Lou and there's Henry, and I go, okay, good. They say, tell them about what just happened and let me know how many want to go. And they'll just about all want to go. If there's one or two that don't want to go, you just repeat the process with them and get them to cross over. And you say, good. Now, are there any other kind of things going on there that's not her? Okay? And they'll go, well, there are these things. And I say, what are these things? I say, well, they're not very friendly. And I'll say, oh, whereabouts are they? What color are they? And they're usually very dark or black. And I'll say, where are they? And they're usually in or around the organs. Brain, heart, lungs, a lot of sexual organs, ovaries, penis, testicles, that kind of stuff. Okay, good. Now we're working with something of a different order. Remember, Joe is just a dead guy. I mean, he's not especially good or especially bad. He's just beer drinking, honky tonking Joe, driving a truck. These are a different character altogether. These are what we will call DFEs, dark force entities. Dark force entity is an attempt to clinicalize the term devils and demons. I told you we're getting into the good stuff.
DFE,
dark force entity. Now, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on this. All the detail on how to manage what we would call ignorant spirits like Joe and dark force entities, the detail work is in here. I was asked by a National Guild of Hypnotists chapter to do 2 workshops on it so I can get it all in. It's in here. Plus me doing one. This is audio, not video.
Cool. plus the other thing with Joe.
Joe types, and also the Dark Force entities, which I'm about to get into, but I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because it's kind of outside of the curriculum. I'm giving it to you because forewarned is forearmed. Okay. So, now I got these Dark Force entities. Now, here we get into some religious, philosophical kind of stuff. I'm going to give you a real general background that is consistent with most of the people that I've worked with. It's not consistent with everybody in the world because everybody has a different belief system. But this is the way it goes. Thumbnail sketch of the history of everything. A long, 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 long time ago, really, 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 really far back in time, a long, long, long time ago, all there was God. And there was peace in the universe. But God has this creative urge. He starts creating stuff. Among his early creations were angels. Angel means messenger of God. Basically, they're parts of God that go out and do stuff. They do God's bidding. God's will and angels' will is the same. They just do what God wants. And they're happy with it. That's what they do. Same will. God's creating universes and earths and all this stuff all over the place. And one day, he gets this idea. He says, you know, one of my greatest creations I've ever made is I'm going to create a being in my own image, different from everything else. I'm going to give this being something I've never given anything. Free will. See, everything else was in accordance with God. He says, so he makes the human being the ability to choose between good and evil. Free will, creativity, makes a little co-creator. And then he announces to all of his creation, gathers the angels and says, bow down before this human being because I make him greater than you. That's interesting. You can take it or leave it. That's the general story. This is where it gets interesting. All up until that moment, the angels are going, rah, rah, God, whatever you want, I'm with you 100%. Then all of a sudden comes along Johnny come lately human being, and all of a sudden, after millennia or an infinite amount of time of doing whatever God wants, perfectly, in harmony with God, we're supposed to bow down to this new kid in town. Some of the angels weren't so crazy about that. That's interesting. According to this story, God gave man free will. As soon as a single angel said, I don't know if I'm too crazy about that. That is out of accordance with the will of God. And it was as if those angels took free will for themselves. Because it was a decision of their own accord, out of alignment with the one great being. So, this is interesting. It's almost like a sibling rivalry. Okay? There's the big brothers, sisters, for the angels, and then the new one. This is kind of like Michelle and her little brother. She was the center of the universe until the little brother came along. And then she fell. Well, here are these angels, which are so in tune with God, who suddenly, some of them, were not in tune with God. And so, according to the story, God takes one of the archangels, it's one of the highest ones, most powerful, closest to him. And the angels are organized in a hierarchy, like soldiers.
That would be Michael.
And he said, Michael, take those, okay, they're out of agreement here, and cast them away from you. Because God could not have this part of himself out of accordance with himself. So they had to be separated. And those were in a hierarchy. What was the name of the highest ranking angel of those which were cast down?
Lucifer.
Lucifer. What does the word or name Lucifer mean?
Name of light.
Light burner.
it could be translated in any of those terms. Light bearer, being of light, I want you to remember that they are angels. It's very important what we're about to do. But they all get thrown away, kind of put down. So, these dark force entities are them. There's the sibling rivalry. These guys here are not too happy about the situation. What do they want to do? They want to screw up everything for human beings. See, human beings want to self-actualize and become more godlike, closer to God. Because of that, they've been cast out, in their opinion. And so they want to screw that up. The things that make human beings great and better. Creativity, love, family, communities, you know, gratitude to their creator. They're going to try to screw that up. So it appears from what we've seen, what they do is they will nestle themselves inside of individuals. And you know what? When a spirit blends with another spirit, you can't always tell your needs, wants, and desires from them. And so they will think thoughts that are fearful or mean or vengeful, and you think they're yours. You see, they want to work covertly. Because if you know that you're good and that those bad thoughts were not of you but of something else, then they can't do their work. But if you think that you're bad, then they do their work. Keep that in mind. So as soon as we've identified these dark force entities in or around sound, we say, Michael. Okay. I like to use my very best vibration of what an earlier name of Michael was. Michael. Okay. I call out to you to wrap these ones in a cocoon of light and hold them here. Okay. It seems they respond better to earlier, more ancient terms. Okay. Michael, I call out to you to hold these in a cocoon of light. You see, I am now in a partnership with Michael, Archangel Michael, and they wrap them up. I don't want them to flee and go somewhere else. I want to work with them. I wish you guys could see your faces. I'm going to be done in just a minute. Okay, so they're all wrapped in there. And I want to say, and I'll go after the biggest, baddest one. I'll say, Joe, which is the most powerful one? That's, oh, that one by her neck. Okay, good. Okay, you know, dark force entity by her neck. How do you like being found? They don't like it. Because they can only be successful if they're not found. That's their rule. You know, you shall not be found. You must work in the darkness, in the background. Make them feel bad about themselves. And so I say, how do you like being found? Oh, they get nasty. They can say mean things. They can threaten you. But they can't do anything to me. And so I say, what happens if you're found? What happens when you fail? And they will universally say something like this. I am cast down. Or I am put farther into the pit. Or they am cast down into the pit. Or I am forced into the dark and lonely place. It's all the same thing. And when that happens to you, you're going to get goosebumps the size of golf balls. It's just like Cal said. Okay? I says, then you can choose. You can go to the dark place or you can listen to me. But guess what? I've never had one choose to go there. They listen. Now remember I said the rule of consciousness is if I suggest a sensation or perception to you that you can perceive, you will perceive it. Like a feeling of the tongue inside your mouth. I say, to the dark force entity, I say, now your attention goes to the very center of you, the very oldest part of you. And there it goes. They can't help it. I say, what do you find? You keep doing that. Deep into the very center, the oldest part of you, your attention goes there. What do you find? And we will find that they will discover their earlier state. And that sometimes the most reluctant ones, well, there's a place in there that's not as dark as the rest of them. Okay. I say you can't help yourself. You look past that, what do you find? Some of them will actually have a barrier around this thing that we're going for. They'll go, there's a barrier, I'm not supposed to go there. I see flames, I see scary faces. Okay, but you can't help yourself. You look beyond there, what do you find? And they'll find a tiny little speck. And what's the rule of consciousness? That which you focus on becomes bigger, right? Say, focus on it, tell me what's happening. It's becoming bigger. And so what we will do is we will transform the dark one into what I will call the newfound one. They will recognize who they really are. And with that, they become ready to move into the light. And if there's any resistance, I'll do the, I now call out into the light to one that knew this one before the fall, loved them. Okay? And believe me, these souls don't react to time like we do. That can be like yesterday for them. And one will come. And I say inside of you the words that this one needs to hear to be ready to cross over into the light. And then we'll get it to go into the light. I said, before you go, tell the others what just happened. They go, they're all ready to come. If there's one that's resistant, we just repeat the process with them. Now here's where it gets interesting. So we get these all crossed over the light. And I speak back to that one, the first one I was working with, the most powerful one. And I said, I'd like you now to call out through infinity in all directions to everyone of equal or lesser rank than you and tell them what's transpired here and that they can cross over into the light. This is really interesting. And let me know when you're done. Let me know I'm done. I'll say, how many? And sometimes we'll get these ancient speak terms like, we are 10,000, 10,000. Which is an actual ancient term for more than you can count. Or we are legion. Or we are, when they'll say some huge number. I say, Mikhail, wrap all of these in a cocoon of light. And prepare to take them to their point and place in the light. We're now cleansing more than just our client, aren't we? We're cleansing all that is. And then I will say to them, today a great wave has passed through the darkness. And even those of greater rank and authority are watching. Tell them what has happened and that they can cross over too. And when you've done that, let me know. I've done it. How many? And we'll usually get one, two, a few of the higher rank. Mikhail, please wrap these in a cocoon of light and harvest them all into the light, to their point of place in the light. Something has changed. It used to be, we are truly in a new age. We go through ages in the development of humanity. Prior to this age, they all had to stay here. What did they do? They cast out spirits. They exorcised them, but they were still here.
Yeah.
We've come to a point, it's like they've done their time. Now if they want, through an act of free will, they can go back into alignment with God. Now, I'm sure they don't just instantly go back with God. There's probably a rehab center over there somewhere. Or they work with them. Yeah. You know, it's a transition thing, and they go back into their appointed place in the light.
Spiritual car wash.
Yeah. So now we've got her removed of any attached dead people, of any dark force entities. Then we might say, okay, before you cross over, is there any other kinds of energies? There's some other things that can go on, cords and things like that. Sometimes structures have been created inside the individual that are harmful. And I say, before you go, undo any of this stuff. Because you don't want to have an attachment to this where you have to work it out later. And if my client's into karma, I say, so you have some karmic debt. Okay? So they remove whatever kind of negative structures or energies are inside my client.
Are you still talking to the...
To the dark force entity, the most powerful one. And they undo it. And then I'll turn my attention back to Sal. I say, Sal, you know that you've received a lot of harm because of this. It's really important that you don't carry any kind of debt towards them or them towards you. I'd like you to forgive them for any harm they've done you, so you can release them completely. Because you can see that, that, you know, they were afraid, they were misguided, whatever. Are you ready to forgive them so you can release them completely? And usually they're very glad to get that done. Good. And then we will have them all harvested into the light. Now I turn my attention back to my client. If I don't do this work that I'm about to do, the client can feel very empty.
Yeah.
Let me, before I get into solving the emptiness, let me talk a little bit about what leaves people open to these kinds of, shall we say, infestation. There's a lot of different things. Being knocked unconscious, being drugged unconscious, including medical analgesia, where you're knocked out, intoxication. This is kind of interesting. Intimate contact, especially sexual contact, with somebody who's infested. Another STD, right? A sexually transmitted DFE. But yeah, being through that resonance, it happens during sex or love. Messing around with spiritual things without proper training. Playing around with magic. There's certain kinds of magic where you invoke spirits into yourself or into your area. These things can all lead to these kinds of infestations. Certainly Satanism and that kind of stuff. So these things can lead to this kind of thing. When we purge it, we cleanse it through this spirit releasement therapy process, the client can feel very empty. What we need to do is now your attention goes to the very center of you, and you find your spark of light. And that, as you attend to it, it grows. And allow it now to become such that it fills you completely. But now it goes beyond you completely. It goes an arm's length in front of you, an arm's length behind you, an arm's length beyond every finger and every toe, above your head and into the earth, like a cocoon of light. You fill them back up with who they are. Taking back, they are the contracted spirit. They own that body for this period of time. We fill them up with it. Then I like to say, every breath you breathe for the rest of this life fans that flame. Surprise. So we kind of give them, rebuild their spiritual immune system, give them back their energy. Any questions about that? Yes, Michael.
Are there many people doing this?
There's a lot of people doing it. I guess it just depends on what you have.
I mean, there seems to be quite a clientele in a sense.
Yes, it is much more pervasive than we would imagine.
I think that if a normal person come here with some problem, talking to you, go back to your forever life, and you begin to move spiritual or whatever, maybe you can stand up and give you a place to come out to because you have not a believer in past lives or whatever. I'm just here for
But this stuff doesn't come from me, it comes from them. If this is done properly, this is not lead at all.
No, I just went to a place that you said go earlier. I just said, I'm in 1927, you begin to remove dark entities.
I know, but they said that. I didn't say that. I didn't suggest that they go there. They went there. I said, follow that thing back to where to an earlier time. Listen, everything I said. If you don't feel comfortable with it, if you don't like it, ignore it completely. I'm not telling you to believe this. I'm not telling you to do this. Done properly, they will realize that you did not lead them into it. They brought this to you. When you get done, don't do it.
No, but I think you should wake up the customer, the client and say, look, you said this. Shall I work with this? Because it's really weird.
Well, if you want to do that, do that. But what I, in our experience, what we've found is that when they get done with this,
it's either been totally within their belief system, or they say this. And one guy goes, that's completely out of my outside of my cosmological belief system. But given my life, that's the only thing that ever made sense. It comes out of them. We don't lead them into it. If you don't feel comfortable with this, then don't do it. You know, I'm saying if you do age regression enough, something like this Joe thing is going to pop up. You can decide how you're going to handle it. Here's one way to handle it. If you want to, quote, wake someone up and then talk to them about it first, that's fine. You're much more familiar with your culture than I am.
I think it's almost illegal.
It's not illegal. Well, maybe in Spain it is. Okay. What I have here is I have a very brief and general outline, general procedures for handling dark force entities. I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or impinge on anyone's beliefs or cause them to do anything illegal, immoral, or any of that. So I'm not going to give it to all of you. You must raise your hand saying, I want it, in order to receive it.
Oh, and when you're done with the process, you say, you didn't enjoy hypnosis, didn't you?
Wait a minute. You want it.
Yes, I can we do phobias and we do
I do not advertise this one. You're supposed to do a file for you guys to send out.
Yes, they have this.
I just know that I don't know. So, on 7th path to me, would think it would maybe make some changes in your vibration where maybe some of that stuff would move on its own or maybe some of the echoes. You know,
Okay, question about 7th path and this stuff. 7th path does all this automatically.
Thank you.
Oh, great. That's great.
That's why when you're put your arms down for a second. When you guys are doing this and I'm listening to you, I'm listening for evidence that this has occurred. I will hear reports like, oh, there was this feeling in my body. It was over here, and then it moved over here, and then it moved over here. And what is that? That is something trying to get away from. The seventh path invokes, right? It's an invocation. And to what? Your highest good, whatever it is. And it comes in the form of light. Okay? And so it will try to avoid it. And then I hear reports of, it was like, then went out of me. Or it dissolved. Or I became aware of this thing that was right here. I was never aware of it before. But once I became aware of it, I recognized that it had always been there. And then it left. Another example, someone said, I saw this shadow of a dark man walking into the light. Another thing that will happen sometimes is that people will become very afraid doing 7th path, and they will be afraid of 7th path. But guess what? There's nothing here that would make you afraid. So who's afraid? Something else. Right? And so the fear you're experiencing, if you experience fear from this, about this, is not you, because you resonate with this stuff feeling good. You love it, that feels good. But if there's fear, then that could be the fear of a dark force entity, that kind of thing. And what it will try to do is anything it can to get you to stop. It'll show you scary pictures. It'll make you think, this is evil, or this is bad. It'll give you nightmares. One lady said, when I do 7th path, I see black snakes inside of me. How's that? What's the emotional component? You're so scared, it makes me want to stop. Exactly. That's what they're trying to do, is get you to stop. Sometimes when people experience resistance to doing 7th path, it's not their resistance. As a soul, you want to wrap your arms around it. As a physical being, it's in your DNA. But if you've got a dark force entity in you, it's going to do whatever it can to make you stop. So,
this off.
That's one of the difficult things. 7-Path will do all of this, but people, if they're afraid of 7-Path, it's not usually them, it is something else, a negative energy inside them. That you're filling yourself with light, it has to either leave or it must get you to stop.
Does all of that come out in Sal's voice, or when you're talking to the entities, are they...
It varies. Okay. Sometimes it's very subjective, and they will talk about it. And then I've had two particular cases that were particularly powerful entities. One was a student. She was sitting where permission is, and she was a foreign student, and she was experiencing all kinds of physical attacks during her 7-Path. And I wound up, while Maury was giving her talk, going into another room. This is at our other center. Took her into another room. We had a recliner, one of our practice rooms. And she went in there. She said, it's very important that I continue to do 7-Path right now. She went in there, and what it was doing was striking her in the stomach, causing her to bend over. So she'd recline, boom, she'd bend over like this. And so I went in there to work with her. And the work I did with her was simply doing the 7-Path with her. Let's say her name was Mary. Then I'd say, Mary, where are you feeling this discomfort? She goes, oh, in my gut. I said, is it okay if I put my hand there? And then I would simply do 7-Path with her. But I wouldn't do it for me. I would do it for her. I'd say, okay. I said, what's your delta? God. God renews Mary's life mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. God made Mary always lovable, just as she is. And so I'd do it with her. What happens when two get together, then it's 2 times 2, power of 4. Then all of a sudden, everything changed. Her face changed. Her body changed. It was covered in sweat. Her hair was stringy. She went limp, and she slid out of the chair, almost serpentine, onto the floor. And then I went down there with her, and she's flailing, trying to strike and all this kind of stuff. And so the only way I could work with her was, if she was laying down with her feet there and head here, is I'd put my hands under her head this way and work with her while she's flailing. And she's put all these marks on the wall next to where she is. And this would be the point in the class where we'd go into that room when everyone would see the marks on the wall from the flailing. But we continued just like that. And she would move around and it would give in, and then it would come back, it would give in, it would come back. And finally, I called out Mikhail to come wrap this one in a cocoon of light. And I said, there's another one that knew you before the fall to come and help you over. And we did that whole thing. And and it was so cool because she's out there. She reaches up like this. She touches the other angel and relaxes. And then she was able to cross over. And then my client was then without that. We did the fulfilling her kind of thing. And some path would have done it all on its own, but it took longer. And when I came back in the room, I found out that I had been gone for hours, but it seemed to me to be about 20 minutes. We were in another place where there's no time. So it was very interesting. Another time, I had a person which was completely taken over by the entity, and she totally popped her eyes. In this other incident, the eyes didn't open. This one, eyes open, looked at me, and said, fine. I'm going to kill her tonight. So I worked with that and got it released. But that's just two of the worst ones.
Mm-hmm. What I'd like to know is the responsibility of the 7-Path instructor when this happens, because, I mean, this is something when you're in a group, even if you go to the side or it happens in the front.
Who's the therapist?
They are.
Delta.
Delta. Okay.
Your role is the teacher. You teach them the technique. Okay? And then they're doing that dance, not with a physical human therapist, but with Delta. Okay? I think they're in better hands than I could ever.
No, I mean, that there are others that suppose that we just started doing 7-Path and someone started taking a turn, so we say. In everyone in order to witness that, or do we even tell people this?
I don't tell them.
That's what I wanted to know.
I've had people writhing on the floor in 7-Path in a class. And I would just go over there and do it with them. And the main thing you have to do is make sure someone doesn't interfere. Let it out. You're going to feel so much better if you let it out. And then maybe if it looks like they're under some kind of spiritual attack, like they're being beat up or something, then you would do it with them and say, where do you feel, you know, that? And say, you know, in my gut, my head, my chest, wherever it is, may I touch you there? Yes. And then just do it with them.
Would you recommend anyone else to also lay hands on them? As you
only
did?
If they were a teacher and knew what was going on.
Thank you.
Because everybody's all about their garbage, and they might do something wrong. I don't want them involved. It will work all by themselves. They don't really need me there. But I can speed up the process.
My first few weeks of it,
tell them about it, if you will.
No, I've experienced that thing some time. Yeah, but I've had this since I was in my 20s. Body going to spasm, especially when it's feeling depressed or something. I did go through something which I didn't recognize at the time because it was never told me. Well, it was never explained enough, but I did experience something. Like, I used to get seriously depressed, and I went through this grief therapy. After I did that, I've never been depressed. That was like 200 years ago or so. I just would get really depressed, and I would clearly get depressed. Like, while that was going on, my body was just going in spasm. So when I started doing the 7 out, it started again. Like, I've heard a thing of a craniosacral release, you know, where your whole, the membranes in your body store energy or whatever. And I figured, you know, it was more to do with that than.
Well, there are techniques out there that will have temporary results or neutralizing results and stuff like that. But when you do 5-path or 7-path, you actually let go of the cause. For example, I had a client who I worked with in my very earliest days with the direct suggestion level only on migraines, got rid of her migraines. Then she decided to become a hypnotherapist. She became a hypnotherapist before I started integrating 7-path. Then she decided to retake the course. And so now it's been years since she had a migraine. In the middle of the course, she comes up to the tears in her eyes. I think I've undone whatever we did to get rid of the migraines, because now I have the worst migraine of my life. And I said, today you're letting go of the cause, because the way out is through. And it's one of the things Marilyn Gordon wrote in her book, Healing is Remembering Who You Are. The way out is through. And so she had to have that migraine one more time, and then she was releasing the cause of the migraine. So you might have done work and got rid of the depression or the writhing and convulsions. Then you do 7-path and it comes back temporarily as you release the cause of it. See, you have to re-experience it.
It feel like it's there now.
Yeah. I myself used to get very depressed for no reason at all, just in a funk. No reason, just all of a sudden. And then when I started doing this kind of work, I've never been through 5-path, but I do 7-path and it cleared it up.
So what if this dark entity comes up and you recognize it and you just don't want to work with it?
Okay. Well, there's two things you can do. One is, if you do age regression work enough, these kinds of things can come up.
Right.
And that's why I'm kind of forewarning you. And what you can do is try to develop a relationship with someone who does this kind of work, and then if it comes up, you just tell your client, something has come up that I'm not qualified to work with, and I'd like you to give so-and-so their card. Okay? Now, the other thing is, some of you were born to do this work, and I don't care if you like it or not. The ego part of your conscious mind says, I don't want to do this. But your soul said, that's what I'm here for. And 7-path is here to guide you to your calling in life. Okay? And so if that's what you came into this life to do, you have a choice. You can either do what you came into this life to do or waste a life. Because that's the other option. Either come into this life to do what you came into this life to do, or you just spend time, eat Rocky Road ice cream, you know, have a ball. But when you get done, you're not going to be very satisfied with what you accomplished. Sue?
I'm a little bit of a hypochondriac, so now I'm picturing these dark things. How do I know that that's not in there?
It might be in there.
I don't
know.
You're the only judge of that. I don't see these things.
It's kind of creeping me out, though.
I know.
So,
where do you feel that creeping you out of the body?
Jumping around.
Well, it's mental. I mean, it's mental.
And use it as a sending point, send recognition.
Okay.
And if they're there,
they'll go.
They go. Like, you have no choice.
Okay.
You see, if this room was dark, if I sealed off all of the windows and all the doors, and then I turned the light on in the room, the darkness must go. Darkness cannot exist where there's light. It's pure physics. It's law. So that's why I deal with these things fearlessly. Because, see, when I first got into understanding metaphysics and studying this stuff, I was told, oh, you need to go find a proper teacher to do this, and I did, and I found a teacher, and I learned all these protection techniques. If I went into something like this, I'd call in the light, wrap myself in a cocoon of light, and all that kind of stuff. And one day, it dawned on me that doing that was an act of fear. Uh-huh. And that's the energy they live off of. So what's the alternative? Good spiritual hygiene. You get up in the morning, you brush your teeth. You wash your armpits. And a few other places.
No pictures.
YouTube visual. Every day. Every day. You comb your hair. You wash those places. Maybe your whole body. And you know what? If you're going to do this kind of work every day, you need to do some spiritual hygiene. And it usually is in the form of prayer, meditation, or both. And the kind that you guys came here to learn, whether you knew it or not, the seven pattern. And so every day, you fan your flame. You sit there in the morning for at least 5 minutes, thousand renews my life. And you invite and you invoke, and your light gets bigger. I've had people see auras go, cow, man, your aura is like out to there. How do you do that? Every day I fan the flame. I've had people tell me that I walked by them and something left. Or touched them and something left. Now, I'm not some special person. I'm just a guy that gets up in the morning and fans the flame. When I go to sleep, I fan the flame. That way I don't have to worry about it all day long. So when I'm doing it out of good spiritual hygiene. Not out of fear. So if I run into something like this, you know what I do? I don't pull in the light, wrap myself in the light. You ever seen one of them camping lanterns? We go, ah, and it gets brighter? That's what I do. I turn up my flame.
Yeah.
And I just expand it out. You see? And I know. He says, aren't you afraid they're going to jump into you? There's no way. If they do, they're jumping into the fire. Take care of it. And so seven path is one of the biggest surprises of the whole course. How you doing, Sue? Kind of exciting, isn't it? Do you want to say something?
I don't know. I'm really frightened right now. This is the reason I'm supposed to be here.
Then you might. That's what. Let me tell you what. If this is why you're here, two very important things. You are everything you need to be to do everything you came into the world to do.
Yep.
And you are not a creator.
Co-creator.
You come in with everything you need to be. Not just what, you know, your talents, your abilities. If you need armor, there's armor around you. There's light. If you need light, there's light around you. You know? As far as I'm concerned, all the time, there are mighty angel wings around me. I'm surrounded by them. Because that's whose side I'm on. See? And so I'm not worried about the dark side. I am protected all the time. Once you make the commitment, yes.
I can attest to the existence of non-physical entities that wish harm, whether it's, you know, whatever you call a dark force or fallen angels, whatever. But there was a Saint Florian ceremony that we actually did to quote-unquote, exercised a spirit. And it's actually quite moving, and it's very similar to all the things that you were explaining about Seventh Path, but we just used a different method to do it.
Yeah. Well, as I'm looking at it, there's another way you can get dark force entities, and that's to be born of a mother who has them. Not that you're, I'm not saying, you know, but you just remind me, if you have, if your mother was filled with dark force entities, then you can carry on that attachment also. Yes.
Where I learned is in Thailand, they have a very casual attitude towards it, because, you know, village life is village life, and if you got tired working in the rice paddies and you went over somebody's for dinner, you fall asleep there, chances are, and if you keep staying there, they kind of want to get you home. They help you go home. That's their attitude towards spirit. Mm-hmm. And every night up the slot.
Well, they've got little spirit houses where they can live.
Oh, hey, if they don't have a spirit house, they don't grow vegetables. You know, every night somebody would go in there and they would just explain, it's like, you know, they're just hitched like you stay in your house too long, you're not taking care of them, you're supposed to get them where they're supposed to go. And it was a no big deal. And sometimes we'd all get a little arrogant, like the head healer just wasn't going to get her done, so she's walking around like a cripple for 4 days until. She, the head healer, goes to the other guy to knock the thing out, and everybody's laughing and pointing, and she limps around the house.
Thailand's a trip. And a friend of mine built a new factory there, and they had all the monks come over and sing and chant, and there's a feast, and there's a little house they built on a pedestal where the spirits can go because you're displacing them. Danny, did that last handout get distributed to them? Okay. I have another handout only for you guys who want it. I don't want to wreck anyone's spiritual beliefs or anything. But I have a brief outline on how to do a past life regression. If you want to raise your hand. Kill the body, and we release the spirit and say what happens next. Here's Joe, 1955. I say we're going to count from 1 to 5. You're going to be the last few minutes in this life. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now what's happening? His body's dead on the ground. He's walking around. We can't kill spirit.
So all goes to his back. All goes is not good.
Well. They just, sometimes they're just ignorant. They just did, there's a whole, I'm not going to get into, there's all kinds of different ghosts. I'm talking about one kind of ghost. People who die and their spirit doesn't ascend. People who die and their spirit doesn't go to where it's supposed to go next. They stay attached to a person. Well, I could tell you story after story. Or a place. And they're not bad, necessarily. It's just Joe. He's just a truck driving, honky-tonking. That means partying. A beer drinking guy, just a normal guy.
It's not good because it's a sad, it's developing a program. That's why it's not so good.
It's developing a program? Is that just
problem,
right. Oh, the circumstance is causing Sal all kinds of problems. But he's not necessarily bad. He's just doing something bad by his presence here. But his intent, he doesn't mean to be messing things up. Now here, why didn't Joe ascend? Remember when I talked about what causes some of the things that can cause a spirit attachment, intoxication, fornication, all that Asian stuff. Okay? So he was living the life that got him attached. When he died, he didn't ascend because the dark force entities in him held it down. They're like lead weights. Maybe they saw the light coming. They're afraid of the light and they steered him away. Or maybe he saw a light and felt the fear, but it wasn't his fear, it was
the dark force entities fear.
When Joe's in the form of a spirit, are those entities still attached to the spirit or only with the corporal portion?
No, they can attach to the spirit.
Just, I'm just curious for your opinion, because I know in like Asian culture, when they describe someone as crazy, they usually talk about them being possessed by a spirit. Like, do you think schizophrenia or any of those disorders?
I believe they can be caused by spiritual problems. And I worked in a group home for 2 years. And I know of one or two cases where, as I look back, I really believe that there was either an attachment, either of a very malevolent individual or dark force entities. Take a break. Time to take a break.
By the way, the lights are working in the bathroom. Good luck. Just kidding.
Sit there in the dark, huh? That's what phones are good for nowadays, because they all light. It's like having a flashlight with you everywhere you go.
Did you ever see that movie, Walk Like a Man? And these poor people die and attach themselves to this baby, and they're following this kid around his whole life.
Oh,
Robert Downey
yeah.
Jr.
Robert Downey Jr.
Oh, yeah.
It's a funny one. It's funny.
I remember an old television show called Topper.
Yeah.
That's really, really old. That was so cool.
Robert Downey Jr. has his own attachment.
Yeah,
he
does.
People
who die under anesthesia.
Well, they're dead.
I know, but you said that they don't ascend sometimes when
they're
intoxicated.
No, I said, no. It's not that you don't ascend if you die under intoxication or anesthesia. When you are intoxicated or experience anesthesia, you become susceptible to attachment.
That was very good.
Thank you. A little bit more than you bargained for.
I actually have done it several different ways, but that's
whatever works.
Clean.
Yeah.
My one teacher always said, spirits are like car thieves. We always want a Mercedes. They have a lot of light, a lot of juice, and get a lot from it. But they're seldom left with the keys in them. But if they are, they're wonderful. But, you know, the pinos are there, the windows are down, the keys up above the visor. There's probably even a bottle under the seat, the joint, the pack of smokes in there. So go for it. But, you know, I'd really rather have the Benz, but I'll take this for now. And that was Thailand. They're very just kind of practical on their explanation. Like, you know, this is it. It's just car thievery is all it is. It's not a big deal.
Yep, I've been to Thailand many times.
I love the Spirit House. If you watch places that don't have them, the vegetable food doesn't grow very well. And I was doing offerings, and I had to do 120 mantras on 4 candles every night for 120 days. In Earth, 5 sticks, Mother Earth offering. And you had to do it if you were somewhere near a Deva house, the Spirit House. I'm at the Mari Airport at the hotel in Bangkok. It's blowing like a cob. All I have is matches. The lighter doesn't work. And I'm there trying to do this. The next thing you know, I hear the squawking on it. And there's a guard. He's squawking on the box. He'll stay. Oh, great, you know, here I am, you know, some guy. Next thing, there's 3 guards. One guy comes, he speaks English. What are you doing? I go, I got to do this offering. So how do you find out about this? I was in Chiang Mai, I got to do this. Oh, come this way. And he called up more guards. There's like 7 guards with me. They take me to the main one, which is like 2 stories tall. And it's on the sheltered side of the building. It's not so windy. And the guards are down there with torches, and they're all doing busha with me. All the armed guards there. It was such a cool experience, you know. Like, oh, God, I emailed them back.
One in Rome.
Yeah.
Susan, you're welcome.
Oh, we're talking about her being for a while.
Okay.
Thank you. She said she needs to.
That's why I talked about all these things. I have to have a file on them so it could be emailed out as I can.
Right.
I have a theoretical question.
Yeah.
Say that your incarnation,
there's two people.
Just goes into another dimension.
Mary.
So
one of them has nasty little entities involved in sex. And so they have sex. Oh, theoretically every just not very often. If a person was doing seventh path, do you think there would be a change in energy of the person who has the icky little energy? Oh, no judgment. Little dark entities. Do you think there would be...
Remember the network? And as you lift yourself, you lift others? One of two things will happen. You either have an effect on them or they'll leave.
Now, have you ever had, like, them run away from you or have an aversion to you? I mean, you're saying that some people say you walk by and they leave. So, I mean, if...
I'm not understanding.
Well, like, when your light is bright, your space is clear or whatever, okay? What I've noticed sometimes is that the entities will cause people to run away from that because they don't want to be seen. They don't want to be found.
Right.
So that's the leaving.
But also... A lot of these people are being guided to us.
I know.
That's why I say, if you came into this life to do this work, then there's going to be spiritual forces out there guiding people to do to you. You just keep
they don't show up on your doorstep like they do mine.
I know.
But
I'm not
they
here
lie.
For that. I'm not here for that, man. Be a spiritual hoe when they all leave after they met.
Controlling of everything. You are God. What will be your one question that you could never answer to.
How does one exist?
No, because you're omniscient. You can basically create yourself.
Don't you feel better now that you got that out?
Yeah, I do.
If you come over here.
So when I finished school, of course I had friends who asked me, would you please practice? Of course I would. This is while I was attending school. So there was someone that I did a pre-talk with. That's as far as I got. And then, actually, I started to weird out. He's male, and I think he was attracted to me. And he would call too much. And in addition to that, I didn't have an office set up. I didn't have an appropriate place to actually do the work. And so it slid, and I kind of let it slide.
Where did it fall?
I just never did a session. And I felt uncomfortable with that because I didn't keep my word. But I sent him an email, and I said, I said whatever. I'm happy to provide you to find another therapist for you. So my question then has to do with the stuff that you're talking about. It's like, it borders on, like, you know, if there's this male female thing going on, and I don't want to encourage it, then it's a.
I believe in it.
And the person is behaving in a way that's making me feel uncomfortable.
You're brave even to take it.
You know, then. I mean, I know it's okay to refer to somebody else, but where does one draw the line? Because I don't want to be referring everybody. I mean, you know, many people.
I think it's
weird.
Once
I start,
it's a strange question. I don't know.
I don't see any ethical problems. You got to take care of yourself. You didn't do harm to anyone else, so you're fine.
Okay, I know that it was okay to refer it out elsewhere,
But in the case, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, if in the case where there is a client, male or female, whatever, who like gets really attached, because you were talking about don't give out your home phone number. That's my only one phone number.
Based on your experience,
I guess I'm asking, where does one draw the line?
Oh, past life. No, I don't think that's what I'm asking.
Well, if you can continue to do the work and you feel safe and you feel it's appropriate, to continue the work. But as soon as you become, feel like it's unsafe or inappropriate, then you end it. And if you can, you refer it out to someone else.
Okay. Thank you.
Ah, ding-a-ling. When I was a little boy, my grandma gave me a cute toy. Silver bells hanging on a string. She said it was my...
You did take my top.
All right, we're back on. One thing I want to talk about, Sid was talking about Asians. And Asians can be a little bit complicated in this because in the Chinese culture, there's a thing that Westerners call ancestor worship, which isn't really a worshiping of ancestors, but that they recognize that the spirits could be around and have some kind of influence. And so if we find that one of the attachments is an ancestor, they can be really nervous about releasing it and making that ancestor angry, because it can cause bad luck and stuff like that. So if that ever happens, what we do is we determine whether or not that ancestor has ascended. And if they have not ascended, then they are now what we call a clean spirit. They've gone with the done, and now they're hanging around, they're doing good. But if they are unascended, they are what we call an unclean spirit, and they need to be released. Then they ascend, go through that great washing machine in the sky, get cleaned up and whatever, and then they can come back. And so that's one of the things, because I ran into that situation. I think, well, how am I going to get out of this? What's the defining point? And I've been to like these Chinese temples and seen some, and they do have an ascension process. My mother-in-law right now is in the process of dying, and so they're gonna pray for her and have her go to the next place and all that kind of stuff. So there is this idea of an ascension transition in that faith also, which is more of a Taoist kind of thing, or something like that. Okay, page 61. Level 2 manual. Forward, onward, and upward. Phase 3, forgiveness of others. List at the top of the page are 1 through 7. Review last session. They come back and we say, well, let's do a review of last session. What was it like in the big chair? What was it like after you emerged? What was it like for you for the rest of that day? How's it been going since I saw you last? That kind of chronological review. So I did gnosis with me now. Yes, let's go to the big chair everyone goes to, whatever they came in for. Put them in the chair, do your induction, and then you proceed. Number 3, set up a room with 2 chairs. Typically, I do it like this. And I've got a whole outline here with, describing verbatim exactly what you say. So I'll typically do the 3 important things we do in hypnosis deepening technique, but I'll do a more abbreviated version of it each time. So this time I go, there's 3 important things we do whenever we do hypnosis together. The first thing, you just follow my instructions. Certainly, by following my instructions, you go deeper. The second thing is, from time to time, I'll have to think about something like that perfectly formed leaf from a tree. And the third thing is, you become aware of feelings, sensations. I suggest you shoes upon your feet, you go deeper. Pants touching your legs, you go deeper. Sleeves touching your arms, you go deeper. With every gentle breath you exhale, you go deeper. So it's kind of a simplified, shorter version. And now we use those 3 abilities you have. I'd like you to think about or imagine what it would be like to be in a round room. A round room of a comfortable size. A round room that's so round, even the ceiling is round, domed like an igloo might be inside. Okay? The round rune has absolutely no significance at all. It's vestigious, left over from a patter script I used to use that I don't use anymore because I think it's wrong. I think there's problems with it. But I did like that part of the script. Because everywhere, the round room is the ultimate non-distracting room. Everywhere you look, it's the same, right? There's not even a corner. You look up, it's the same. Everywhere, so it's just this environment, this featureless environment. So there's a round room of a comfortable size, so round even the ceiling is round, domed like an igloo might be inside. I say a comfortable size, whatever that is for them. And now in the round room, we put two straight back chairs, just two simple chairs facing each other a few feet apart. Has a familiar ring to it. Okay. Yeah. One of those chairs is a listening chair. One of them is a speaking chair. I'd like you to go sit in one of them. That is the speaking chair. Now you look across the other chair. Let me tell you about that chair. That's a listening chair. Whoever we put in that chair cannot get up, cannot speak, can't do anything unless you or I have give you him or her permission to do so. In a moment, count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, someone very important from your past goes into that chair. Now, here is where you have to make a big decision. You are either going to put the main player from the age regression, the person who caused the problem, if that exists, from the age regression. You put them in that other chair. Or you put the one person that hurt them more than anyone else in the chair. So now you got to decide. And this is how you decide. If they're doing a too much behavior, eating too much, drinking too much, smoking too much, working too much, sexing too much, drugging too much, whatever it is, feel bad, distract situation, why are they distracting? Because they have a feeling inside them they don't like. The more of that feeling I can neutralize, the more we're going to reduce the drive to distract, right? So in that case, I want to do the greatest amount of neutralizing of that emotion. So in that case, I would put the one person that's hurt them more than anyone else. Because working with that person is going to give my client the most relief as we neutralize that emotion, our emotion. If they came in for something like a fear or phobia, well, they're not doing a too much behavior, like eating too much, drinking too much. There's an emotion from the past that's causing them to behave, you know, in a fearful way. In that case, we put the person from the past who caused them to have a phobia. So, once again, if they're doing a too much behavior, eating too much, drinking too much, smoking too much, one of those, feel bad, distract behaviors, and then feel bad again. We got to get rid of as much feel bad as we can. And so we do that by putting the one person in their life hurt them more than anyone else. In all other cases, if there is someone identified in the regression that caused the problem, then what do? We put that person in the other chair. Is it clarity on that? I did not have this level of clarity until a couple of years ago. I used to just always put the one person hurt them more than anyone else in there.
Okay, could you say, do it one more time? Yeah, please.
Third time's a charm, right? Okay. This has been developing over years and years. So I'm going to be doing the forgiveness of others therapy now. I'm setting up a place. This is based on the work of Fritz Perls, Gestalt Therapy. And so I'm going to have my client in one chair and another person in the other chair. Except this takes Fritz Perls' work another step further because you don't just pretend or imagine or role play. They're going to hallucinate being in the room with the SOB. Okay? So we got to figure out which one to put in the chair. This is the razor. This is how we divide. If my client is coming in because they're in this situation, eating too much, drinking too much, smoking too much, as a distractor to manage the feelings inside them, theoretically, if they felt good, they wouldn't do this, right? If I could get them halfway between here and feeling good, they'd have half the drive to do this, right? So, they have a feeling inside them they don't like. What I will do is I'll put the person, the one person that hurt them more than anyone else, in that chair, because that's the one that's causing the most amount of pain inside. The more I neutralize that, the less drive there is to distract. So, if they're doing it too much behavior, we put the one person in their life hurt them more than anyone else in that chair. Okay. If they are coming in for some other problem, like what? Free-floating anxiety, and they're not doing this, or fear of snakes, you know, that kind of stuff, then we just take the person from the age regression that caused that problem. For example, my little boy that's playing on the Tonka truck, playing Tonka truck on the kitchen floor, mom's fixing the sandwich, mom screams, terrifies him, associates the fear with the spider, mom's the one that needs to go in the chair. You got it now?
Yeah, thank you.
Very crucial point here. Okay. Then what we're going to do is we're going to have the client, number four, express feelings towards the offender. What we're going to do, now we just put the one person that hurt them more than anyone else, or the person from the age regression. Oh, here's an insider tip, trick, and technique. When you do this work, you want to have your age regression notes out in front of you. Because if you put the person who hurt them in the age regression in that chair, sometimes they'll go, well, I don't think they ever hurt me. And you go, well, what about that time when you were three, and she scared the shit out of you because of the spider. Look what that did to you for the rest of your life. Oh, yeah, I remember now. Good. Tell her, you hurt me when you screamed at the spider. And we have all that, those SSEs and ISE to refer to. Or if they name a few things but left out a few important things, you got the age regression right there you can refer to. Hugely important. Okay. So then what we do, we know this person hurt them because they are either the person that hurt them more than anyone else or the person that hurt them in the age regression. And so we say, I'm going to have you say some things to this person, but don't say them unless they're true. Tell him or her, you hurt me when you fill in the blank. Now, you hurt me when? Fill in the blank. And we're pretty sure they've hurt them. See, it's not a big leap. Good. Tell them, you made me feel. You made me think. Okay, here's my, I'm taking some more notes. I need to not use red pen because it doesn't show up good on the video. Here's my notepad. Name, date, page number, lines. Here's the margin. I say, tell her, you hurt me when? And I'll put a W there. That stands for, you hurt me when. And then they say, you hurt me when I was born. You said you didn't love me anymore. Good. Tell them, you made me think. I put a T, that stands for you made me think, T for think. Because I'm always trying to find out, you know, what happened, what it made him think, what it made him feel. Good, put an ending on this. You made me feel. Put an ending on it. And then each time he tells us, we write it in. Now sometimes we say, tell him you made me feel. And they'll go, like I was no good. Now we know that doesn't mean they said like, and so that wasn't what they felt, that's what they thought. And so you just say, good. And what did that make you feel? Because we don't criticize our clients, right? And so we praise them for what we got and then ask for more. And then we just say, good. Is that the last time they hurt you? Good. Tell them, you hurt me when? And we get that. You made me think. You made me feel. And we just keep on going, filling this up. Writing it down. Because when we get to the end, and we might have two or three pages. Get all done. I need to have I'm going to check to see if the forgiveness is done, and I might want to recall this. Oh, you say you forgive them? Wait, this is the person that did this to you. It made you think this. It made you feel this. This is going to be useful for me later on in the session. So, as we're doing this part, my pathers refer to this as filling the platter of pain. And this is important. We want to dredge up all the hurtful things that were done between those two individuals. So here's the platter. There's a handle. Another handle. And we go, you hurt me when? And they give you something. You made me feel. You made me think. You hurt me when? You made me feel. You hurt me when? You made me think. You hurt me when? You made me feel. You made me think. And you just get all of this
crap.
These are flies. Out of them. Up into the surface. Then we get all that there. You say, but what hurt me the most was the most hurtful thing. And that's the cherry on top. That's what the client is always considered to be the unforgivable sin. And if you don't get that forgiven, nothing else counts. Because that's the thing that's causing the most pain. That's what we got to neutralize. Everything else is easier. Okay. So that has to do with express the feelings towards the offender. Then we're going to use the 10 keys to forgiveness to make that person forgivable. Now, so there's an interaction here. Between, we want to uncover as much stuff as we possibly can that caused that person pain. Because when we get to forgiveness, it's going to be applied to what's been revealed. Stuff that's left unrevealed is unforgiven. If we don't get all this done and we start going for forgiveness, almost get it done, they go, wait a minute. What about that time when you... And they'll start bringing up more stuff. You got to start all over again. Sometimes it's unavoidable because of the complexity of the client or the client's reluctance to reveal. Okay? You give everything you possibly can up and then you forgive it. But sometimes there's more. Okay? If they reveal something but they haven't revealed something that's on your list from the age regression, then you also mention it. What about that time when you were 12 and blah, blah, blah? You get it all mentioned.
Can you ever use a blanket thing at the end that says something like, and all the other stuff they did to you?
Sure. That's not as good as actually getting it out there. I'll see. You forgive them for all of it.
Yeah.
But if they haven't put it up there, they're holding back. If they're holding back on the verbalization of it, then they're not going to express it. And then what's going to happen is they're not going to get the full forgiveness. Now, another part of this expression of the emotion is, it goes like this. So there they are in the round room. You hurt me when? You made me feel. You made me think. Good, tell them, tell them. You become the cheerleader. That's right, tell them. You hurt me when? You made me feel. And they tell them. What hurt me the most was? And they tell them. And you get all this stuff out, right? And then what I do is I say, this really gets them. And then, see, I might be yelling at this point, tell them, yeah, tell them. And so now I got to change. And I'll say, and unless something happens today, he's just going to keep on doing. You're still going to keep suffering. How's that make you feel? Oh, God, that makes them mad. And they go, I said, how does that make you feel? Mad. Where do you feel that in your body? I'll tell you. I say, how would you like to be rid of that feeling forever? Oh, I'd like that. Good, follow my instructions instantly, automatically. I'm going to touch you firmly on the shoulder. If it's a big guy like me, it's going to be more firm. If I got an 87-year-old lady, you know, with osteoporosis, not going to be so firm, okay? I'll say, here we go. One, two, three. Feel it. Feel it. Send those feelings up into the shoulder. Send that feeling, when you're whacking people, it's really easy to feel angry right there. And send the feelings up there. So now send it down your arm. Send all those feelings in your hand. Hold them in your hand. Hold them up there. And I'll lift their hand up. And I say, tell them, look how I feel inside. Look how I feel inside. Tell him, I'm not going to let you do this to me anymore. Good. He doesn't think you mean it. He doesn't think you mean it. Show him how strong you are, that you mean it. I'll put my hand on you and say, press down, show him how determined you are. And I will have slipped a pillow on their lap. And I will pull out the hand, the fist will go into the pillow, and that is pound number one. Boom. That usually feels pretty good at that point. And I say, that's right. Drive all that anger into that pillow. Now, I'm not suggesting that they're hitting this individual. I'll say, drive the anger into the pillow. Remember, first we put it into the shoulder, then we put it in the hand, now we're putting it into the pillow. However, if they imagine in the round room that they're pounding on the person and they like it,
go for it.
Then go for it, right. Just let them have it. We're not going to do nobody no harm, no how. Okay? We've done some terrible things in that room. We've thrown Mama from the train. We've done all this stuff. We've done cattle prod. We've done machete. You know, whatever needed to be done to make that person forgivable. Usually you don't go much further than just pounding the pillow. Once in a while you get someone that says, no, I don't want to hit. And I will say, you're not hitting them. You're flushing out of your system. No, I can't. Then I say this. I want you to think about one of those old-fashioned, long-handled pumps, like on a farm. Pump the water out of the well. Your arm is like that. And I want you to start moving your hand up and down to pump that anger out of you. Will you do that for me? Yes. Because there needs to be some physical movement to move that energy. Now, so sometimes they're one-handed pounders, sometimes they're two-handed pounders. And what we'll do is we'll start off with, you hurt me when I was there. And then I will switch to this. You were such a fill in the blank. Oh, this is where it gets good. You were such a, you know, and put it. And if they were reluctant, I say, you've said it under your breath. Take your power back, say it to him or her face. You're such an asshole. And it reminds me of this one client. I have to close the door for this one. Because there's some profanity. Cal, I just love it when you talk dirty. There was this little old lady. She was a caricature of an old lady. I mean, she's a little old lady. She's bent over. And she's got her little cane. She's got her little glasses down, and her hair is done up in a bun, and she's got the shawl. I mean, she was like right out of a 1940s comic strip. And she's like this. Yeah, she's so nice. And I don't even remember what we were working on. And we get to this point, and I said, I'm going to touch you on the shoulder. I want you all that anger come up into your shoulder. Feel it. Feel it. So I'm hitting a lot wider, right? And then I put that feeling down into your hand. And all of a sudden, that bony little hand. You ever see a kung fu movie where they go, crack, like that? It was like, crack. His knuckle popped, you know? And she lowered her hand into that pillow with such a thud. And I said, tell him, you're such a... And there was this violent movement started in her body. She's like, thunk. And then, like, it started shaking. Like, oh, no. And she started shaking like this. Like, oh, my goodness. She's going to die. You know? And then she held up her hand, and that shake just moved out of her body into her hand. And she goes, you're such a... You're such a... You're such a... Cocksucker! And I could only go, ooh, because she's like your grandma. You know, this was some guy that like left her at the altar, broke her little heart when she was 17, 8 years. I mean, there was 70 years of fermenting of this angst. and she could never express it because it wasn't ladylike or it wasn't something you did in that era, and it had been there, and it finally had a place to come out completely, and it was like,
freaked you out.
Yeah.
Probably one of those people that wouldn't like to get, would it be effective enough to instead squeeze the pillow, like put me all the power?
I used to do squeezing and pressing, but squeezing and pressing is like repressing and pushing down. And I'd like to get, and so I you might see me in an older video doing press that down into the pillow. But pressing down is too much like repressing or pushing it back down. So I like getting it out. And so I say, you're not hitting, you're pumping. Like the long handle on a pump. Pump it, pump it, pump it. We need that kind of physical action that has the meaning of getting it out, not pushing it down. Okay, but you will see them in old videos sometimes doing that. But I've abandoned it. I'll always try for the more violent alternative. Okay, so now we've got this going on. I tell you something, you're not going to believe this. I tell you a lot of stuff you'll never believe. Did you know, this is a fact, that in a fair horse race, me against the horse, be the fastest horse on earth, it could be the Kentucky Derby winner, I could beat that horse in a fair horse race, any distance that I could run. Isn't that amazing? You wouldn't think so. There's only one stipulation. I get to completely and utterly exhaust the horse first. You know, get completely wear it out, it's laying on its side, tongue hanging out of its mouth, I go, go! Okay? That's what I'm doing with this beating the pillow. If we have logic and we have built up emotions over decades and we put them in a battle, who's going to win? This is like the little bookworm over here, and here's like, you know, the sumo wrestler over here. Okay? You ain't got a chance. That's all I got is logic. So what I do is I have him do this. This is the normal curve, a Gaussian curve. Okay? Time. Energy. And what I do is I say, put that person in that chair that hurts you more than anyone else. Tell them, you hurt me when? You made me think. And I keep getting this anger up until they're pounding on that pillow. When I get them really wailing on that pillow, we're starting to bleed off energy. Then when I get them down there, they start off with, damn it, look what you did to me. And then when they're like, asshole, then I start using 10 keys to forgiveness. Now I start going with logic. Good, follow my instructions instantly, automatically. And then I'm going to go after the offender. And I'm going to say, what's wrong with you? Didn't you grow up in the kind of family where you learned whatever they apparently didn't learn, or they wouldn't have done what they did to my client? But I have to exhaust that anger first, at least temporarily. Remember, this is like sourdough bread. Okay, if I leave it, it'll all come back. But for a while, I've kind of cleaned their pan, and now I can do the work. Does it take a while for that whole dough to get sour again? Be the offender. Offender, didn't you grow up in the kind of family where you learned how to treat a child properly to make her feel loved, safe, secure, valued? No, where I grew up, little girls were just there to do the work. Okay? Or whatever the situation was. I say, look what you did to her. Is that what you meant to do to her? No. If you knew then what you know now, would you like to have handled this differently? Yes. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to go methodically through all the 10 keys of forgiveness, which you should have read, to, as needed, what? Get insight, why they got to cause the problem, if the offender suffered, if they regret the way their background, if they'd like to have done better, all these different things. These realizations make them forgivable. And then I will say, good, be the client. Do you believe them? If they don't believe them, then I'll go back to the offender. She doesn't believe you. Are you telling the truth? Yes, I am. Good. Inside of you are the words you need to say that she'll believe you. Do it. We'll go back and forth. We're going to go into this in some greater detail tomorrow. But I want you to begin watching a video today so we don't get too far behind schedule. You've got an overview of what I'm going to do. You've read the chapter. You've read the transcript. Let's watch some of that video and get it behind us. Then tomorrow we'll go into more detail about this and also watch another video. Take 5 minutes while I get this set up. Take the Bentley.
The Bentley with the keys running is definitely better, but you know, for
500 horsepower on the Arnage twin turbo.
Oh boy. Unfortunately, there are more Pintos running around with the windows and the doors open.
But they're bombs.
Keys in it.
They explode when they get a hit from behind.
But spirits don't know the difference. And it says the Mercedes is better, but the Pinto's open here, but I think I'll go here.
Yeah.
That was how they explained it. I loved it. That makes sense. Light workers make great, wonderful targets if they got their doors open and they got the keys and spiritual hygiene. However, there are more Pintos hanging around bars in crazy places, so that's where they go. But they'd really rather have a Bent.
Targets of opportunity.
It is. It's an opportunity waiting to happen. Very well done. I loved it. I loved it. I wasn't going to buy the tape, now I am.
Sound working?
It's not a danger.
Thank you. guys, let's not monkey around here. Please turn, page 147. Okay. So there's the stuff you want to watch for. This is up to you. You want to have this out. These are the most important things I want you to watch for during this video. If you wish, you may also have that transcript out side by side. You can pull it out of your notebook and have both. The audio on this starts off bad and then gets worse. When I recorded this, I always do a mic check, 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 record it, play back. It seemed fine. And then what happened, a few minutes into the program, evidently the battery started losing its power, and so the record volume was not very good. When you turn it up, and there's a lot of background noise that happens. So we will turn it up to like a medium level or whatever. Most of the time you can hear what I'm saying. And you didn't come here to learn how to be a client. You came here to learn how to be the therapist. So what I'm saying is more important than what she's saying. Although it's nice that you can hear what she's saying. You can hear about 90% of what I'm saying and about 80 to 75% of what she's saying. But also you've got a gist of what's going on by reading the transcript. You can have it there. It's a little bit tough to get through this with the sound being so bad, but it's worth it. The next video you will watch is also on forgiveness of others, but the audio is fine. So, because we do two forgiveness of others sessions with her. Okay? Nowhere is it written that you only need to forgive one person. Nowhere is it written that you can get it all done in one session. I will be in and out of the classroom. Danny, did he show you how to adjust the screen for this?
It's ready to go.
Okay. You'll have to nominate one of you guys to, if it gets too soft, to turn up the volume, if it gets too loud, to turn it down. Okay? And it's this big knob right here. I'll turn it up to a certain volume before I leave, which sounds good. But you guys might decide that you want to change the volume.
I'll do it. Just let me know what you need.
Okay. So that would be the big one.
Got it.
The dark energy down there.
Now,
is there a title on the movie,
video? Yes, this is just like it says on page 147, tape 3, phase 3, forgiveness of others therapy. This one would be A, and the next one is going to be B, but we'll get to the next one tomorrow. Begin.
Now, if I use the word sleep, I don't mean sleep. I mean, you can act as if you're asleep.
That's because she was talking about she's a little sleep.
Alright. I'd like you to start off by handing me 20 days of labor on. If you want to move them, you can. I don't recommend you don't cross your legs and not take your shoes off.
Now, the transcript will start after the induction and deepening. We'll actually start the movement.
Slowly and close your eyes. Take your attention to your body. If there's any places in our heads, just let them go to the eyes. Just notice how good it feels to sit down to the chair. I'd like you to take your attention to your eyes. Notice how you relax them when they're closed. I'd like you to simply hold on to that relaxation. So long as you hold on to that relaxation, when you hold on to that. Once you're sure you can do it, when you count to make sure you can do it, move your eyebrow to your right. You'll be stuck. Don't be afraid to test the root high, because so long as you hold on to that relaxation, you can hold on. and stop consuming it, and just put it everywhere. The quality of relaxation and allowing your eyelids is the same. You can stop it when it's going to be relaxed. The quality of relaxation and allowing your eyelids is the same quality of relaxation I want for your life, self, and spirit, spirit, and time. So just mentally take that quality of relaxation at the top of your head, and then set it down slowly and easily across your entire body. So that your entire body takes on that same wonderful feeling of relaxation. Now hold on to that relaxation. And bring it up into your chest. Going to lift up your hand and drop it down. Do not help me lift the arm. Just pretend that your whole body is like the body of a rag doll. And sleep. And sleep. And relax. Every breath that you need, every thought that you need, every situation that you need, every sensation that you need. The sound of my voice. Touch of my hand. The moment I'm going to come, you are done with me. As I do, just allow yourself to sit down with that big old chair. That will reveal this lovely relaxation that you've ever experienced in this big old chair. Even the ceilings are there at all. Like a figure might be inside. Now imagine there's two chairs, two very simple chairs facing each other, just a few feet apart. You're in the center of the room. And now invite your mind to go over to one of those chairs and sit down. Already you're beginning to look across that other chair. And you're wondering why. Who governs in that chair? In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, someone very good is going to go in that chair. The chair of the chair. That's the listening chair. So whenever we put in that chair, must listen. He or she cannot get up. Not me. 2. It's the one person in my life that is hurting more than me. The more pain, the more tears, the most frustration, the more stress. 3. Now you can speak. Who goes in the chair? What are your father's first name? Say again. I want you to hold it down. He's going to listen. You cannot get up, you cannot speak. And when he leaves this room, he will forget everything that he has. But that's okay, because it's not about him. This is about you. I want you to look over there. And you say, something wrong with you, isn't that true? Tell him what you thought was wrong with you. Tell him how that affected your relationships with him and his children. Okay.
Do you want to talk to him?
You were never made for me. Karma was never made. And it wasn't fair, was it?
It was very fun.
And you became a teenager. You continued to hurt me. So you hurt me when?
Hurt me when? So we left them.
So?
Hurt me when?
Tell him how that made you feel.
Ugly.
Tell him what that was like for you.
Didn't want to do anything. Didn't want to go anywhere.
So he made me think. How that affected your relationships with others. Relationships even today. Righteous anger, because that was not fair, true? Feeling, like, Dad, you're such a fill in the blank. You might have said under your breath, take back your power and say it to his faith. Dad, you're such a. That's right. As you say that, I want you to notice the feelings you have inside you, that anger. Where is it in your body? How would you like to be rid of that feeling? Would you like that feeling to go away forever?
Yes.
This is what we're going to do. I want you to take that feeling in your chest, put it in the shoulder, push it into my hand, Follow my hand all the way down to your hand and push it into mine. Push it into mine. Push that anger. Push that anger into my hand. And now tell Dad what you think of what he did to you. Tell him. Tell him. Dad, you're such a... Tell him. Come on.
I hate you.
That's right. Good. Push it into this pillow. Two hands. Come on. Tell him what you think about what he did. Tell him.
I hate what you did.
Tell him.
I want you to love me.
That's right. Tell him. Tell him about the hurt. Tell him about the pain. Tell him about how you carry it with you every single day. Tell him about how you try to do things, but you think it's no use. Inside of you, you think it's no use. Tell him.
I've always tried to please you and have you be proud of me. I just never enough, never happy when I do.
You make me feel.
Like a failure. You make me feel like I'm never good enough, that I don't ever do anything right. I can't keep the house clean enough. I can't take care of myself. The kids aren't exactly what they're supposed to be. I don't have a good job. I don't make enough money. I don't... do the right thing, I don't go the right way.
True or false, he's a bully. That's not true. Use the right word. You're such a... Come on, tell him.
It's never happy. It's never good enough. It's never good enough.
Keep talking. You feel that feeling? Put it all down into the pillow. Come on, keep talking.
When's it gonna be good enough? When's it gonna matter?
Preparing to follow my instructions instantly, automatically, when I touch your head. Be Muhammad. Muhammad, I can't believe what I just heard. I can't believe it. All you had is precious little girl. All she wanted you to do was to love her just for who she is, and she was lovable. Just who she was. She wanted a daddy that would be there for her, not make her feel lost and confused and let down and worthless. But what do? You pick on her. You started picking on her very, 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 very early in her life. And you just keep on doing it. And you hurt her, and you hurt her, and you hurt her, and you hurt her, and you just keep on hurting her. Is that what you meant to do? Look, she hates what you did to her. You make her cry. She walks around and tears just come out of her. Is that what you meant to do with your little girl, Muhammad? Speak. You didn't mean to beat her up mentally? You didn't mean to make her feel abandoned? Didn't you grow up in the kind of family where little girls were treasured and loved? Were they meant to feel good about themselves? What did you learn about them there and how they were supposed to be treated behind? No different from horses and mules? Didn't you learn in your family how to compliment girls when they looked pretty? Or when they were smart? What did you learn to do with girls that looked pretty or smart in your family? What did you learn about them? What might happen if you told them you were pretty and smart?
This wasn't done.
It's a scary thought, isn't it? Who knows what might happen? So if you ever did see her as being pretty or smart, capable, you'd be afraid to do something like that, wouldn't you? That's right. Would have been nice, though. I mean, you look like you're a pretty little girl. Would have been nice if you could have been raised in a family where they learned how to treat girls so they felt good about themselves. Isn't that true? Then your little girl wouldn't have been so hurt. Wouldn't that be nice? But that's not the way it was it? Would have been nice. When you were a little boy and you thought about being a daddy, and you thought, well, maybe you have sons, maybe you have daughters, did you think, I want my children to grow up hating how I raised them? Is that what you thought? Did you think that a little boy, well, I'm going to be a daddy, and I'm going to make my daughter a terrible, so that she can't ever feel happy about herself, her body, her career. Is that what you want to do? How did you want your children to grow up? You looked, didn't you? How does that make you feel? If you could go back knowing what you know now, would you like to have done a better job? Maybe just once in a while saying a nice thing and appreciating, letting you know you're proud and you're proud. So you'd like to have been a different kind of daddy than a girl, is that true? It's time to stop talking to me. It's time to start talking about tell about the daddy you'd like to be. Is she ugly? Was she ever ugly? Was she a stupid little girl? Time to start telling her the truth about who she is. Give her back the good news about herself. Tell her the truth.
You know, it's very, very things I can look like. Your grandparents look like it too.
Maybe a time when you were proud of her, maybe grandma not that much. Maybe there's nothing wrong with them. Maybe it's a person. I don't know. Tell them there's nothing
wrong with them. Tell them there's nothing
wrong with them. You had the problem of moment, that time, and you wished you could have reached out to her, loved her, and told her something else. Tell her how it's all for you to want to express yourself, to want to say words of encouragement and love, and not be able to do it. Tell her how it's all for you. Childhood, teenage years, the youngest years of your life, to feelings of lack of confidence, fear. Who knows what you might have done? Who knows what you might have accomplished? Who knows what life you might have experienced? but because he was afraid, because he let me down, he lost all of that, and he was very sad. Not my mom. I'm sad because of something you could do today to give her back everything from this moment on, her confidence, her good feelings about herself, her feeling of lovability, worthiness, would you be interested? It would require a gift of love. Would you still be interested? It's a gift of love because it's completely unselfish. You do not get to benefit from it at all. She's the only one that benefits. There is so much. Last stipulation. You don't have any control. She gets to decide. She gets to decide if she accepts it. There's still a choice. Children. She'll be better as a wife. She'll be better as a person. And this is what we get to do. This is the goal. You ask her from your heart of hearts. You give her for everything you've ever done or ever given her. She'll be better. And you get one shot, one chance. This is once in a lifetime stuff. You need to say whatever needs to be said so that she can forgive you completely, absolutely. Then she gets back. Then she gets to have her confidence with her feelings about herself. And maybe about my life. Would you like to get her all back? Go ahead. Take as long as you need. Say everything that needs to be said. And when you're done, say, I'm done, so I don't do it unnecessary.
I know that I didn't
express my pain in a way that you can feel it or see it. It was hard for me. I didn't know how to do it. I still don't, but I know. I don't know how. I see a lot of good things in you. I know I've always wanted that. The things we should work on, and things that you need to be better at.
I did too much of that.
It wasn't necessary. You already knew what you needed to do. You're a hard worker. You're responsible. Do you like to keep people happy when you care about the kids?
She had a mean fire in this room.
She just gets angry sometimes.
You don't understand why, though. She's been through so much unfair. You understand her? Is she or was she ever hurt? She can't really believe it. Maybe just recognize you, it's enough. And she's not affected, is she? Does she need to be affected?
No.
I think she needs to be. She's not lovable. She thinks she was never lovable. She thinks nobody loves her. She thinks nobody loved that little girl. She's wrong, isn't she?
Yeah.
Tell her.
She?
Don't tell me. Tell her. Tell you. How did that make you feel? How did that make you feel? Is he like that to you? Mm-hmm. Sometimes you're a little jealous. Tell him.
What if I was different?
some of the problems you want to put down. Regret that. Looks like a great place to stop. We'll continue tomorrow.
She's tough, isn't she?
She's tough.
I'm like... Any immediate questions or comments? Yes, Belinda. It's just a trigger point. I could touch on her shoulder, but it's just, I'm saying, touching the client the way I do. Oh, my microphone's over here. Is really in your face hypnosis. So she asked about why am I touching the way I'm doing and switching them back and forth between Muhammad and stuff. And my style of hypnosis is literally in your face, and it's directive. And so, it's done so to be efficient. And so I just go, be God, be Muhammad. And because they can respond that quickly, because our clients can switch back and forth that quickly, I simply demand it so that I can move through the work more quickly. Be Muhammad. You gotta. That's amazing. And they can completely switch into that other personality.
In the beginning, when I think it's when she was first becoming the Muhammad, and you were just, it took a bit of, we did like a paragraph saying, become him.
So be Muhammad. Muhammad, didn't you grow up in the kind of family where you learned to treat little girls? No, I kind of went after it like that. It's assertive, and it gets the job done quickly. And so I go in and I'm starting to uncover the 10 keys to forgiveness. That he grew up in the kind of family where, you know, girls didn't have a lot of value and he didn't really know how to interact with them, that kind of thing. So that's the first time I say anything about Muhammad. Be Muhammad. Muhammad, and then I go after him.
It's so much cleaner. It just cleans and streets things up. There's no fuzzy. There's no time to take. It's just like...
One of the blessings that happened to me in my life is there was a time when I was seeing a lot of sessions. I mean, I was Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, boom, boom, boom. Do this, when I get done with Ghana, what I do? Next, someone else comes in. And you have to clean things up. You find shortcuts, you find clean ways to do something, you find a system that works. And that was really important in the evolution of 5-Path, to just have that opportunity to go to it over and over and over, day in and day out.
That's really appreciated, because that was one of the big ahas, how clean that happened, when you could move from one to the other, all the cues were there, the physical cues, everything was there, it moved so fast.
I was fortunate in that very few people that were working at this level, you know, age regression, parts therapy, we're ever seeing this many clients. There's people doing that kind of work, but they weren't seeing as many clients as I was. But because I was seeing so many clients and doing this level of work, it really helped me to kind of clean it up and make it very efficient.
Okay. So all the information about Muhammad is basically stored in our subconscious, like everything about his character, basically.
Oh yeah, she's known him all her life. It's her father. It's so funny too, because afterwards I'll go, wow, I didn't know that. Well, I certainly didn't know. It all came from inside of you. We know a lot about these people we grew up with. And even, remember, anger is a wall. And when we're angry at them, we stop seeing their side of the story. Because if we're angry at them, part of being angry is being fearful, actually. In fact, all of these negative feelings are really fear. Anger is fear, sadness is fear, loneliness is fear, it's all fear. But if I talk in those general terms, it doesn't help us very much. So if we are angry at someone, seeing their side doesn't help us too much. We're on the defensive. And so we block all this information off. We know it, but we ignore it. We put it in a who cares file so that we can defend ourselves, right? That's why I go after the offender the way I do. Be Muhammad. Dad, what's wrong with you? Didn't you grow up? And I go after him the way that my client did, because there's a genetic thing inside of all of us. And here's the rule. You can call your mother, father, brother, sister, father an asshole, a jerk, an idiot, stupid, but I'm not allowed to. You can be mad as hell at your mom and go, God, she's such a bitch. And I go, that's right, your mom's a bitch. Wait a minute. You know, it's okay if I say it, but don't you say it. What happens? An immediate genetic, okay, instinctual reflex to defend them occurs. Okay? So that's why I do it. Because they've got this information, it's tucked away, where they ignore it. And then I go, be Muhammad, or be mom, be dad. I go, all right, what's wrong with you? Look what you did to her. If they called him an idiot, I'll say, you're an idiot. If they said you're an asshole, I'll say, you're an asshole. If they said you're a jerk, I'll say, you're a jerk. What does that do? This genetic desire to defend triggers. Now we have access to all the information we need to defend. This is one of the things that dawned on me that made me successful every single time in forgiveness therapy. I need to be able to access that information they've been ignoring all their lives. Then all of a sudden, boom. Well, I grew up in this kind of family. I wished I could have done better. I never learned how to treat a little girl right. All this stuff starts coming out as they hallucinate being the offender. And afterwards, I didn't know that. Yeah, you did. It was all in there. And I triggered it by attacking your mother and doing the things that you said to her. So it's an interesting little trade-off that happens there that works every single time. Mark?
At one point you start to say, so he was a bully, wasn't he? And then you said, that's not the right term.
Well, that's right.
What term would you use for that?
And I'm always paraphrasing, and this is a good point here. They don't become mindless automatons. Your dad's a bully. My dad's a bully. It didn't fit. And she goes, bully's not the right word. Okay, well, it's the right word. So let's talk a little bit about leading the client. Remember I said, don't lead the client, don't lead the client, don't lead the client. Why? In age regression, we're messing around with a part of the brain where memories are stored. If we change stuff in the past, the part of the brain that stores experiences from age 5 and age 10 and 3, then those changes can become false memories. In parts therapy, which this is a form of parts therapy, okay, kind of. But in this forgiveness therapy, this gestalt therapy, I could lead the client all over the place because I'm not dealing with the past. I'm talking to grown-up now. So I don't have to worry about leading the client. I can throw out hypotheses, I can suggest this and that. And it'll be and so there's no problem with leading the client in this kind of work.
If they get stuck, even if they don't come up with their own words to describe a hypocritical bastard, you can encourage and you can kind of prod them.
Right.
Wasn't
he sounded like a bully to me. Yeah. So I said, bully. But in her mind, that didn't fit. Yeah, okay, then you say it. Oh, wait until you get to the next one she has to forgive. Yeah, it's really, you ain't seen nothing yet. Good. Okay, so mark that page wherever you're at. That's what we're going to take up tomorrow. We're going to talk about something else now. Okay, your chances to do overt testing are over. We're going to begin doing something else today. And this is really, really important. Do not hypnotize each other today. Today is not hypnosis. Remember I said do not fake it? Today we fake it. As soon as you get good at not faking it, now you got to fake it. So what's going to happen? You guys will be falling into hypnosis all over the place.
Clutch. Reverse.
What we're going to do now is I want you to role play some age regression work. And so let's see if we can find where that assignment is. It's right about here. Okay, page 56 in the Level 2 manual. Well, actually, there's a little preamble to that on page 55. It says, practical exercises. I will read this to you. Note that you will be not doing hypnotherapy with each other in class. Do not regress to times that have painful emotions. If your classmate begins to experience any painful or uncomfortable emotions during the practice sessions, you are to move them on to a pleasant time. For example, you could say, I'm going to count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, you'll be at a pleasant time. And it's not too complicated. If during the role play or when we're actually doing hypnosis, we do not work on each other's icky stuff. If they start getting icky, you say, I'm going to count from 1 to 3, you're going to move forward to a happy time or a pleasant time. 1, 2, 3. Or you could simply take them out of the situation by saying something like, now your attention goes to the feeling of the chair pushing up into your back, the scene fades, and you're all grown up here with me. Take them out. Okay. Now here's the role play exercise today, without hypnosis. Do not hypnotize each other with this exercise. Your first age regression practice will consist only of role-playing. Okay, role-playing the age regression. This way, you do not have to manage the hypnosis and conduct the age regression at the same time. The exercise consists of establishing a happy time where you're going to regress to before you start the exercise. Then you skip the hypnosis and deepening part and just go directly to the age regression. The exercise starts off like this. As I count from 5 back to 1, you go back to that time when you were blank years old and you were blanking. Describe the events, such as when you were 8 and you caught a fish. So here's the outline. 1. Prearrange the time and place for the regression, preferably before the age of 12. 2. One person pretends to be hypnotized. 3. Start off the exercise by having the one in the role of the hypnotherapist say, when I count back from 5 to 1, be at the time when, prearranged time, as if it was happening all over again. Spend a few minutes, 2 to 4, practicing moving through the role of the client, moving the client through the experience. Your goal is to remain in present tense and not lead your client. Then, unregress the person, you could say something like, now I'm going to count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, you'll be all grown up again, but still in hypnosis. Then emerge. So, we will also have the same assignment for tomorrow morning. If all goes well, tomorrow at this time, you will start doing hypnosis with each other and regressing. But I want you to have a couple runs in. So here we go. Here's now. And we say, okay, where would you like to go? Some happy time, some pleasant thing. They're around the age of 12 or younger. Maybe you went to camp. Maybe you went to fishing. Maybe you got an A on something. Maybe it's the first time you didn't get an F on something. I don't care what it is, okay? Some pleasant time. Could be around water, could be on a bicycle, could be a swing, something. You figure it out. If you can't think of anything, then come up with a fantasy event. Doesn't matter, we're not doing real age regression anyway. Say, okay, I want to go to that first fish I ever caught when I was 5 years old with my Uncle Bob. Okay, good. So here you are. You go, okay, pretend to be hypnotized. How's that for an instant induction?
Okay.
Good. I'm going to count from five back to when you go back to that time when you are 5 years old and you're catching a fish in Uncle Bob. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There they are. 5 years old. What's happening? Oh, I'm out on the boat. Oh, how do you feel about being out on the boat? I feel great. How old are you out on the boat? I'm 5. Okay. Tell me what's happening. Oh, I think I've got a fish. What makes you think you got a fish? Oh, because the pole is wiggling. Oh, so what are you doing now? I'm going like this. Oh, okay, good. Tell me everything as it happens. You just have them tell you the story. You have to stay in present tense. Don't use remember. Their name is 5. Okay, 5 now, what's happening? Oh, I got the fish in the boat. Describe it to me. Oh, it's all shiny and silvery. Good, what are you doing now? I'm picking it up and I'm trying to get the hook out of it. Oh, what does that feel like? Ooh, it's all slippery. Good. And they have them tell the story. When they get done, you say, okay, good. In a moment, I'm going to count from 1 to 5. You come back to now. This is so important. If you don't listen now, you're going to screw it up. When we went back, we went 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, be there, right? When we're done, then we got to go this way, right? Now we're going to come back to now, practicing in class, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You need to unregress them. Don't emerge them while they're 5. That's very bad form. And it can be just a little discombobulating. It can be a little bit confusing. So you regress them, then unregress them. Count backwards for regression, forwards for back to now. So you go, good 5, okay. In a moment, I'll count from 1 to 5. When I get to 5, you're going to be all grown up back in the classroom or at the center or whatever. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So now we're back here. You're still in hypnosis. Now you need to emerge them. Now, I know you didn't hypnotize them, but the way to end this is through an emerging process. In a moment, I'll count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, open your eyes, fully immersed. 1, 2, 3, look at me. And you do feel good, don't you? Yes, I do. Ta-da, done. This exercise should only take about, 5 minutes, 6 minutes, because you don't do any induction. Okay. Spend a couple of minutes figuring out where you want to go. Each time you do this, you can go to the same event. You don't have to dream up something for each practice.
Are we starting with the first impression, daytime or nighttime?
That's a good thing to do, yes. So you go, okay, here we go. As I count from 5 back to 1, you go back to the timer. You're 5 years old catching the fish. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Be there. First impression, daytime, nighttime, indoors, outdoors. Alone or with someone. What's happening? What do you think of that? How do you feel about that? Good. And you just spend a couple minutes exploring the situation, staying in present tense, and say good. 5 in a moment count from 1 to 5. When I get to 5, you'll be all grown up, still in hypnosis. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Good. Now I'm going to count from 1 to 3, and you will emerge from hypnosis. 1, 2, 3. Look at me, and you do feel good, don't you? Okay. Let's see. Mitch, come up here and help me out, will you please? But you have to promise not to go in hypnosis. Okay. Tell me about a time we can go to in childhood and visit.
Okay. There was a time I went to a trout farm.
A trout farm?
Fish with my sister, my parents.
Copycat. Okay. How old were you?
About 5.
Okay.
I guess I was in hypnosis, right?
Yeah. Okay, good. Okay. I have my hand on your shoulder just because your eyes are going to be closed. Pretend to be hypnotized. See? That was easy.
That was easy.
See? All right. I'm going to count from 5 back to 1. When I get back to 1, you're going to be at that time, when you're about 5 years old, at the trout farm. Here we go. Touching you on the forehead. 5, going back. 4, 3, 2, 1. Be there. Quickly. First impression, daytime, nighttime.
Daytime.
Indoors, outdoors.
Outdoors.
Alone or with someone.
With someone.
Who's there?
My sister.
Oh, how old are you?
5.
Okay, 5. What you doing, 5?
Fishing.
What's your sister doing?
Fishing.
Describe what she's doing for me.
She's having trouble putting her worm on her hook.
How can you tell she's having trouble putting worm on her hook?
he her line isn't in the water.
How do you feel about that, Five?
I want to help.
So what are you going to do, Five?
Put her worm on her.
Okay, tell me everything as you do that. What's happening now, Five?
I'm fishing the worm out of the little cup.
Mm-hmm. How's that feel? Describe
Icky.
It to me.
Icky.
Good. So tell me everything as it happens. What are you doing now, Five?
Trying to put the worm on the hook.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't like it.
How can you tell it doesn't like it?
Because it's squirming.
How do you feel about that, Five?
It's going to go on the hook.
Okay, good. Now what's happening?
It's on the hook.
How can you tell?
It's poked through.
Okay, how do you feel about that? Okay, go on. Now what's happening?
Now I tend to talk to her.
Okay, how does she feel about that?
Happy.
How can you tell?
She's smiling.
Good. What's she doing now?
Putting it in the water.
Good. Now what's happening?
She's got something.
How can you tell?
She's playing with her pole.
Oh, how do you feel about that?
Great.
Tell me everything as it happens. What's happening now?
She's pulling it out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
She's got something on the shore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, describe it to me.
It's a little silver fish. It's got red on its belly.
Oh, okay. Go on, now what's happening?
She won't touch it. She's holding the line.
Oh, so what do you do?
I'm trying to get a hold of the line myself so I can grab the fish.
How's it going?
Not bad.
Mm-hmm. Tell me everything that's happening.
I get the tail of the fish. It's really slimy.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do?
I'm trying to get the hook out of its mouth.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Having trouble.
How do you feel?
Good.
Mm-hmm. Go on. What's happening now?
I think I need Dad's help.
So what do you do?
Take it to Dad.
Uh-oh. Now what's happening?
He's taking the hook out of its mouth, and he's putting it in a box.
Oh. What's happening now?
We go back to the bait cup.
How do you feel?
Good.
Good, good, good. Okay. In a moment, we count from 1 to 5. You're going to be all grown up back in the class. 1, 2, 3. Still in hypnosis. 4, 5. Now, in a moment, count from 1 to 3. When I get to 3, your eyes will open. You'll be fully emerged, feeling wonderful. 1, 2, 3. And you do feel good, don't you?
Great.
Good. What did you get from that experience?
It was good. Very visual. Very. Mm-hmm. I mean, even just doing the role play.
That's right. If you do this well, they can relive the experience. They can actually go into a revivification. And they'll start doing everything with their hands just like they were reliving it. See? And so it can be anywhere from very hypermnesic to even to where they'll get the sensations of slipperiness and this kind of thing. Good, good. What did you get from that experience that maybe they didn't get just by watching?
I don't know. I didn't get the smells. That wasn't... But I could be there right on the shore.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Okay. You're kind of surprised how much detail there was.
Yeah, absolutely. Pine trees, everything.
Okay, good. I could have asked him, what is she wearing? What are you wearing? What's Dad wearing? Yeah. All that stuff would have been there.
Shorts. And she had little puffy pants. And
good. All right. Thank you very much. So you guys know what to do, right? Yay! Yes, Amy. I know. Any questions for me?
Go back to age 25.
Begin.
I've read the part.
Try if you can work with someone you haven't worked with yet. You want to try to work with people you have not yet worked with.
Sure. One of the big offices in your career is where it was before you got there.
That was easy. That was easy. That was easy.
Did you have fun? Yeah. Did you do your talk or something?
Oh, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Well, you're going to have fun doing this.